is your update for September 16th, 2018. I'm Filippo D'Onofrio.
I'm Patrick Mifflin.
I'm Brandon Perkins.
I'm Chris Elogi.
And I'm Lee Lamb.
And this is a special episode today because it is officially episode number 200.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we've somehow managed to suffer through 200 of these things. So, hopefully...
Seriously, what is the problem with you people?
Yeah, what have we done with our lives? Yeah, so we'll probably be doing 200 more, and then we'll call it quits. Yeah, around 400, I think.
Had a good run.
Yeah, yeah. Get done. But for today, we've brought in a special guest. We had him on the show a couple of months ago when my computer decided that it was done with me. Castlevania Ryan from Castlevania Games is back on the show. Welcome, Ryan.
Thanks for having me back.
So before we get started, we gotta know, Octopath, what do you think?
I purchased Octopath Traveler. I haven't played it yet.
Oh, my God. Well, at least you and Lee are in the same boat there, so.
It's my shame!
Yeah. I was trying to wrap up Far Cry 5 before I got into that, and honestly, I haven't even done that yet, so... I mean, we'll get into what we've been playing, but I've gotten into something else in the meantime that I think is going to take up the next week or two for sure before I can even think about doing anything.
Yeah. Well, since you got the floor, you may as well let us know what have you been playing.
Yeah, sorry. So Tomb Raider just came out the other day, and I've been kind of locked into that at least last night and today.
I have been hearing very good things.
Yeah, it's done well. I mean, I'm fan of the franchise. I think what they're doing with the way they rebooted it in 2013 is excellent. And I like the way that the gameplay mechanics are, kind of the balance between story and puzzle solving and action and everything's just done really well. And they're building really well on top of the mechanics that they've introduced in the first two games. So this game, I think the thing that people will be most interested in, I think mechanically anyway, is you were able to do stealth kills before, but they've really kind of expanded on that and made it more of a feature of, you know, when you get into the scenarios where there's, you know, you have to make your way through a heavily guarded area. There's just lots of opportunity to stealth kill and, you know, cover yourself with mud in advance of entering an area and things like this so you can hide better. That's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, but the only thing that really has, piqued my curiosity about that game is how the AI seems to react. We've seen it in the trailers where the AI will be talking to his coworker and then just discovers that same coworker dead, and he goes, oh, there's a body here. You know.
It's my favorite part of stealth games. It makes no sense. You're like, oh, shit, they killed Phil. I didn't like the guy. He owed me $20.
Yeah. So far, I mean, that can definitely happen. And depending upon if you're in, ground cover, whether it's bushes or vines or something like that, you'll actually pull them in so they're out of sight. But they will still notice that somebody's missing and start to look around for them, which is kind of how you can... hopefully grab them also sight unseen and people just start disappearing. There's one part where, you know, they go, okay, something's up here. And they went on alert anyways, even though I hadn't been seen just because too many people had gone missing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just kind of strange. Cause it's like when they look at this as kind of a mechanic, whereas it should be put in as more of a social dynamic. So we're not there yet as far as that kind of technology goes, but yeah, it'll happen eventually where things are a little bit more, feel a bit more natural. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah.
It's just especially, they're introducing games where, I can't think of it, what it was. There's a game coming out where the multiplayer aspect is that some of the, you're playing the hero going through the campaign, but some of the villains are played by other people. Right. I can't remember what that was, but that seems like an interesting idea because then they're going to definitely respond how, you know, I mean, there's no AI there. It's an actual player.
Yeah. I know Doom Eternal was doing something similar in there.
Is that what it was? That might be what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. You can jump into somebody's campaign and take over one of the demons, whichever one you want. And it could be cooperative or it could be adversarial. It looks kind of a cool option. So. And yeah, that game's looking pretty spectacular, if you ask me.
Oh yeah,
Doom. They did a great job with the last Doom. That's one I'm definitely highly looking forward to.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, is that pretty much what you've been playing? Just good at Tomb Raider.
Tomb Raider. It depends. When I'm on the go, I don't actually take the Switch with me because that's really it's my kids. Right. But I do take a the Superboy SFC, which is just Hyperkin's portable Super Nintendo.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm playing through A Link to the Past right now, as well.
Oh, man.
Yep. Always a good experience.
Yeah.
It's been a long time for me on that game. So, I mean, honestly, more than 15 years since I played that game. So I don't remember what's going on. I'm on my way to, I guess it would be Death Mountain to get the third pendant so that I can get the Master Sword. Yeah. And of course, I remember that you wind up going to the Dark World and you flip back and forth and stuff like this. But it's been long enough that it feels fresh to me, and I'm definitely having to refigure it out.
Yeah. And even after all these years, I mean, that game still holds up. It's
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's weird that, you know, Link has weird pink hair, but...
Yeah. So do you get, when you're out with the Superboy, you get, like, looks from people wondering, what the hell is that?
Oh, I mean, I'm usually just playing, like, you know, in my car in the lunchroom or something if I'm just taking a break somewhere.
Yeah.
But generally, no, nobody even really notices.
Yeah. It's because we live in a mobile world, man. Everybody's looking at something.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So I don't think anybody gives a second thought of, like, what is that guy playing? It's more just like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
It must be some new tablet I haven't seen that has a Super Nintendo cartridge sticking out of it.
Yeah. So, yeah. So apart from that, well, I guess I can kind of talk a little bit about what I've been doing. It's, I started down this road a few months ago. I've been doing all of the emulators. This week, I dove into GameCube and Wii again to see how those are progressing. And Dolphin has made a remarkable amount of progress since the last time I looked at it.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's they've added a brand new renderer, which has helped performance immensely. What else have they been doing? There's still a handful of games like NASCAR Dirt to Daytona, which is one of those rare NASCAR games that I actually like. They have a couple of issues here and there, but for the most part, it plays fine. Fire Emblem, I didn't have any issue playing that. Metroid Prime runs well for the most part, except it's got issues with shader popping. So there's a switch in the settings that lets you enable Uber shaders and kind of pre-cache everything from the beginning. So kind of alleviates that problem and makes Metroid Prime playable quite well. You can do some stuff like upscaling, filtering, all that good stuff. So.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really, really nice to go through these console emulators and say, this is coming along. For me,
it's nice to know these libraries are in good hands.
Yeah. Yeah. For me, it's like taking one piece of hardware and then making it do something else. That's always been like a big draw for me. So,
same here. I'm totally with you on that where you're like, hey, look, I got this one cool thing. I can do these other cool things now. Yeah. Like, this is great.
Now, do you think these might make an appearance on the PS3 stuff we've been doing, or do you think that might be asking a little bit much of the PS3?
The one thing that concerns me about the PS3 homebrew, as far as that goes, is the RAM. 256 megs of RAM is not a lot. I kind of doubt that you would see stuff like GameCube or Saturn or anything like that. Well, yeah, Saturn, possibly. But yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Right now, as far it goes as far as what's the most advanced one I've seen on there. There's the arcade stuff, CPS 1, 2, 3. It's got a pretty good name core in there. PC Engine, But yeah, it seems to stop at I think this fifth or sixth gen PlayStation 1.
Okay.
But yeah, they don't bother. They didn't even bother with PlayStation 1 emulation.
Well, it already has a really good PS1 emulator under the hood.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what I've been doing as far as that goes, and which has led me to researching all the stuff that I need to refurb my PS3, which has developed hot power supply disease. so yeah, I want to do that before the motherboard flexes too much and breaks either a CPU or a GPU contact. So yeah, I got to replace that power supply, replace the thermal paste, give it a good cleaning. Hopefully, if there aren't any bad caps on there that need replacing, I should have a PS3 that will work for many more years to come. With some nice custom firmware that's allowing me to do a lot of very, very interesting stuff. It's, you know, like I didn't even know that for the longest time that the PS3 basically had PSP, the capability to run PSP games. They just never used it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was there.
Which made sense when they were trying to sell PSPs, but after that, not so much.
But I mean, we had a clue because like they did release the PSP minis, I think, the little downloadable games that you could play, and those would run on the PS3, but retail games wouldn't. And it was like, why? So, yeah, it's a fun thing to get into. It really is. It makes me wonder.
It makes me wish they had that on the Super Slim, not just the Slim.
Slim is a bit weird because it has partial support for custom firmware, but not quite. It's like it will let you do stuff like install games to the hard drive. It'll let you run PS1, PS2, PS2 and PSP games on the Super Slim, but it won't allow homebrew. That part is still locked off. So
PS2 is enabled across the board now, right?
Yeah, basically.
So I still have my OG FAT, but I've had to have it reballed, and it still didn't work right. So, shit, Phil, I should just send it to you and be like, can you fix this?
I was if I can get mine fixed first, but I really need to find someone who's like a super good electronical engineer that can really like dig into this kind of stuff and figure out what's wrong. If anybody knows somebody, let me know. Well, be in the comments of the thing, and let us know. We're on Facebook. I'm not hard to find.
Yeah.
So that's been pretty much it for me. What about you, Pat?
I wish I could say that I've been playing a good variety of games, but really NHL 19 has taken over my life. Their slogan going into this year was One Hockey, and goddamn if that isn't what they accomplished, because no matter what kind of hockey experience you want, it's there for you with this game. There's the perfect simulation, there's your traditional franchise modes, your career modes, there's arcade hockey in there if you want it. They even have the NHL 94 controls to choose from if you want to use those. If you want to back off from the actual gameplay aspect and focus on managing a team, the franchise mode is better than it's ever been. I started with a brand new expansion franchise, and I'm currently watching them go through their inaugural season. I've actually got that going in the background as we do this podcast. But after that, if I wanted, I could go on and do some pickup games of 3-on-3 arcade hockey. They've got a really good sort of social hub / hockey lifestyle app in there called World of Chell, which is going to do a lot for just connecting players. Really, any kind of hockey experience you could ask for from a video game is available for you in this package, and it's going to be a mainstay of my gaming for a very long time to come as a result of it. I just cannot say enough about this game.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, it's a real breakthrough. We knew this team had it in them, but it was a matter of pulling it all together, and that's what they've done this year. So it doesn't matter if you want like a full hardcore simulation of the game of hockey, or if you just want to go in and have kind of an arcade-like experience. Pretty much all of hockey is there for you to enjoy. if you have even just a passing interest in hockey, this is a game that can be recommended. Whereas in past years, it was like, well, if you can get past the controls, if you can, if you really want to learn about the ins and outs of hockey, then this is a good game to learn from. But this year, even if you just maybe watch the occasional game on TV or find your way to the rink once in a while, that is, you know, just a passing interest is enough to sell this game, I would say.
Let me ask you on that game. I mean, you piqued my interest in it. I thought that I might want to try Madden a few years ago, Madden 50. I don't know why. But I got the game, and after a two-hour tutorial, I was very confused. Well, I felt like I had the controls, but I also felt like if I leave now and go do something and come back later, I'm going to need to redo this.
You'll have lost it all, yeah.
Yeah. How approachable, I guess, is NHL 19 for someone who hasn't been playing, you know, the franchise?
Well,
playing that hockey.
Yeah. There is a lot of depth to the skill stick controls if you choose to use them and learn them and everything. But if you just want to pick up and play a simple game of hockey, you can turn on the NHL 94 controls and literally just have like three buttons to worry about.
Okay, perfect.
And then there's a hybrid system for somebody who wants simplified controls but wants more functionality than it, the NHL 94 layout will give you.
That actually kind of interests me now.
No, they actually literally call it NHL 94 option.
Yeah, because I loved NHL 94. I think that was really the last one I played.
Yep, that's in there. And then there's kind of a hybrid stopgap between between the skill stick layout and NHL 94. It's kind of reminiscent of all of the years previous to 06 before they had the skill stick. And then there's... and then there is the skill stick option, which gives you pretty much everything you could want to do on the ice.
Yeah.
So it all depends on what you want out of it. You can tailor an experience that that you will appreciate no matter what level of what your level of commitment or understanding of the game.
Nice. Yeah. It sounds like they're building a system where you can start simple at the NHL 94 controls, and if you want to get more involved, you can graduate up to the hybrid controls. And
yep.
if that isn't doing it for you, you can spend the time and go the skill stick. Yep. So.
And this is EA.
This is EA.
I'm so confused.
Well, Sean Ramchak Singh's team is a little bit of a different kind of beast in the EA family. They're pretty much given full autonomy to make the best hockey experience that they want to make, with very little oversight by the quote unquote EA way of doing things.
The suits.
Yeah. Now, the World of Chell mode does have loot boxes, but it also has a pretty good case of loot box diarrhea. Okay. So, they're practically thrown at you. Yeah. So you're not really going to,
I love it when diarrhea is thrown at me.
Well, it's the best way I could think of it, because honestly, from what I've seen, there's not even really a way to buy loot boxes, or at least it hasn't told me that I can pay money. Yeah. So it's not shilling them at me if there is a purchase option. Yeah. So it's so just
maybe more of a loot box system in the Tekken sense of the word, where it's just stuff that pops in.
Yeah, that would be a good way of looking at it. Everything that like World of Chell is, you create your own player. You can set their loadout depending. You can set a bunch of different loadouts depending on what kind of style you want to play at the moment, and then set a few traits, and it'll populate your player ratings and your statistics based on that. And then you can just drop into like games of threes, or you can even do some organized stuff on there, because there is organized league play, position locked, so you are one player on a team, on a regular squad, and do things like that. Or you can just do something that they call ones, which is one-on-one-on-one versus an AI-controlled goalie, and whoever scores the most goals wins. You just play on a half rink, and you go at it. And so the stuff that you find in the loot boxes can be just clothing that you from various teams or from Adidas because they've got the NHL deal now, or just some stuff that was custom made by EA, which is pretty cool. And it's all really cosmetic. The stuff that there is some traits and stuff that you'll unlock through the loot boxes, or they're really called hockey bags. But it's really just a way to get players together online and get the community to gel better.
Okay.
And it is so perfectly executed. I could go on for hours, really. But this is definitely a big breakthrough game for Rammer and his team up in Vancouver.
Sweet. All right, so that leaves Brandon. So what have you been up to?
Yeah, so basically my primary gaming for pretty much this week and the last couple of weeks has been Divinity Original Sin 2, the definitive edition for PS4. Like I said, I basically... I'm loving it because, you know, I don't have to worry about all the stuttery graphics on my PC. So I can actually play it as it was intended to be seen. And it is, like, it has a very modern sensibility, but it is very much like an old-school isometric RPG. You know, if you remember Baldur's Gate or Planescape or anything like that, you know, old-school Fallout, you basically have a pretty good idea.
Is it co-op, Brandon? I can swear one of those.
Yes, it is. It is okay. Co-op. You can play co-op if you want to. I don't. I just play, you know, by myself with my little party that I've gotten together. And it is hard. It is a very challenging game. I mean, like I said, it's an old school isometric RPG, so there's a certain degree of challenge that you expect. But the degree of how difficult it will be sometimes can still sneak up on you. So basically there's like three difficulty modes. There's story mode, explorer mode, and classic mode. The most difficult, arguably, is classic mode. The sort of mid difficulty is explorer mode, and the easiest is story mode. I've actually been playing on story mode for this time, and I'm still getting my ass kicked. So, I mean, it's somewhat easier than it would have on classic mode, but it can still massacre you in a matter of minutes if you're not careful, or even seconds, depending on what you end up stepping in.
Yeah.
Because there are things that, even if you just dip a toe into it, it's instant death. But basically, it's a lot of fun. It's also really funny, too. That's the other thing. It has a very kind of snarky sense of humor about it, even though it's overall a very serious game. Especially when you get the pet pal attribute, which lets you talk to the various animals that you come across. And
that sounds very like Black Isle Baldur's Gate right there.
Oh, yeah, it very is. Most of the time you'll come across like some mice or something, and you know they think they're somehow royalty or something, and that you have to bow down to their royal mouseness or something like that.
I think I remember a Disney cartoon like that.
Sometimes you'll come across a mouse and they claim that they were originally humans, and that they need you to get a potion so they can change you back into a human. And then you find out, no, they were just screwing with you. But yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. It is an amazing game, but expect a challenge when you do. And the other thing I've been playing, in anticipation for Valkyria Chronicles 4, which still up in the air whether or not we're actually gonna I'm gonna get a review code for it or not. Which sucks because I don't want to pay for things.
Yeah, you've been salty about this for a minute.
Yeah. I guess they didn't like how we... I guess they didn't like how I reviewed Valkyria Revolutions.
Well, to be fair, you weren't the only one.
That hey, they earned it.
Yeah.
So
they got to be mad at the whole gaming media.
Yeah.
Make a better game. It'll review better.
But so in anticipation for that, whether or not I end up getting it for a review code or I go out and buy it myself, I decided to give the original Valkyria Chronicles for the PS3 a whirl. And, it's real easy to get sucked back into that game almost immediately. Because it does a really good job of, like, sort of giving an idea of what it's like to be in the middle of a war, but also have, like, the less serious moments as well. And also, it was, like, the first, like, real action RPG I ever... I mean, not action RPG, but strategy RPG to really sort of, I guess, you know, address one of my problems with a lot of strategy RPGs, which is... You know, if I've got a gun, why can't I be the one who actually aims and shoots the damn thing?
Right.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, so wait, you're replaying the original, you said?
Yep.
What are you playing it on?
PS3.
Okay, because correct me if I'm wrong, I'm out of the loop, but weren't they putting out the first one on the Switch, too?
It's coming out in a couple months, I think. Yeah. If you get four, you get a discount on it.
Also, it's available on PC.
Yeah, I've got it on PC. The Switch is so... I swear to God, there's something wrong with me, man. I can't play an RPG unless it's portable now. But anyway, I'm sorry.
I get it. But, you know, that game... Basically, Valkyria Chronicles is the closest you're ever going to get to having a Japanese developer actually make a gritty World War II game, except they basically have to fit it in an alternate fantasy world because reasons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when Capcom made the 1940X games, it was controversial as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
And those were just shmups.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's like, you know, like, it's really obvious, like, what side is supposed to be what, and, like, what group is supposed to be. Like, obviously, the Darsans are supposed to be this world's equivalent of the Jews or the Romani. And, you come across a Darsan concentration camp at one point. Mm. But, God, it's so good. It still holds up so well all this time. I can't wait until the fourth one gets here.
Well, we've got 2 weeks left. So.
Yeah, or we get a review code between then and now. But,
yeah.
So that's what I've been doing, so...
Chris?
Yeah, Chris?
Yeah, so I've been continuing to play more Spider-Man. Where am I at? I'm getting pretty close to Peter Parker figuring out Barton Lee's alternate ego.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of introduce the Demon Clan guys that wear sort of Japanese.
Wait, you're just meeting the demons, or you've been fighting for a while? Oh no, you're like halfway through.
With MJ. Still,
yeah, you still got a chunk to go. I beat it. Yeah. I beat it last week.
Yeah, I've been kind of going along, and then they introduce like a new side activity thing, then just kind of doing all that and just exploring the map. So I'm currently trying to do a lot of the research center stuff.
Mind if I give you a tip? Okay. So I don't know if you care about trophies or anything like that, but you end up unlocking something later that's like a sort of like they call them challenges. They're really similar to the Dark Knight challenges in the Arkham games. If you want to, you have to do perfect on all of those challenges if you want to be able to unlock all of the suits and all of the gadgets, and then there are corresponding trophies for both. So if you haven't really messed with any of that yet, like unlocking a bunch of stuff, I would actually wait until you can get the challenges done, and you can get silver done on all of them, unlock all of the suits, and then reload your save and unlock all of the the gadgets, so you still get the trophies and then choose whatever you want. Because the gadgets are really helpful, but like there's some where you can, there's like a fifth upgrade. You'll never use any of that stuff. But if you plan on like trying to get the platinum or anything else like that, you're going to make your life exponentially harder, because actually getting gold on some of those challenges is really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I'll keep an eye on that. But yeah, that's been a lot of fun, especially having things like J.J. Jonas Jameson's podcast popping up of him just talking shit constantly, which I think he had some call-in segments where somebody calls him anger. He has anger problems, stuff like that. It's just fun to see.
I really wish I could listen to that outside of the game.
I'm sure somebody
Phil,
will put up
he sounds like a mix. Yeah, he sounds like a mix of Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah.
And Alex, Alex Jones, in other words.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Also been playing more Dragon Quest XI. I now have a full party. After the sort of that Japanese town, that is where I picked up my third and fourth people. And they started introducing at least a big bad. I don't know if it's going to be the big bad, but yeah, I have gotten out of that. It's gotten to my next big town, which is a sort of Arabian desert kingdom that I'm now sort of working my way through. But yeah, the battle system's kind of fleshed out a bit at this point, as my two new companions are mages. One is more focused on like black mage stuff. And the other one is more on white mage stuff, with some buffs in her arsenal as well. So now, like, buffs are becoming a bigger part of the battle system, which is nice to see, beyond me just running into fights out in the fields and just hitting X constantly just to do attacks. Now I can throw in some spells and such to set up other... my other teammates for that stuff. And what I like is the two mages, if you do physical attacks with them, they'll regain mana. So it gives you a good reason to break up their spell casting and do some physical attacks, even if it's not going to do much damage. But yeah, that's going well so far. And I checked out the beta for Call of Duty Black Ops 4's Blackout mode, which is their Battle Royale mode. And I think they've gotten it up to 88 players, which is quite a bit for a Call of Duty game that's typically, I think, maxes out like 16, maybe 32 players in their regular matches. And it's very much cribbing the PUBG style of Battle Royale game. So yeah, the big difference I've seen is that they make equipping stuff a lot easier than in PUBG. So you can pick up things and it'll automatically equip them if there's an open slot. But then you can hit up on the D-pad and it'll show on your HUD, give you easy way to swap out your health packs. So if you want to switch from, you know, your bandages that do a little bit of health regen to some of the bigger stuff you have, it's pretty easy. They also have that sort of thing for the throwables. So if you pick up smoke as your first thing and you get actual grenades, you can swap them pretty easily without having to go to the inventory screen. And so they do some really cool UI stuff and all that that definitely sets it apart from, you know, PUBG and Fortnite. As for the game itself plays pretty well. Obviously, you have some of the control stuff that you expect from Call of Duty. Though here, you kind of have a lot of kind of weirdness, because there are vehicles on the maps. It's like big open map, so it kind of feels like Battlefield a bit, which has a lot of craziness that can go on. I think there are helicopters, ATVs, trucks, and maybe one or two other vehicles that can be driven around. And I saw somebody just crash into the top of a hillside I was on. And I saw the main part of the helicopter just roll down the hill. And I think they managed to jump out just before then. So I was like just lying prone on this hill and just watch this guy just run right past me because he never saw me. So I just pulled up my gun, just shot him, just killed him. And it's fun in the same way that PUBG and Fortnite can be when you're doing well. One of the weird differences they have is instead of parachuting, like the free fall, they have a wingsuit that you use to get around. And I think that lets you get more distance in your fall. So if you don't get necessarily where you want to go, or if you can't drop closer to what you want to go, but you can get a longer distance more easily. It seems like there's going to be some progression stuff in this mode. They just don't have it active for the beta. But yeah, it seems like they are definitely keeping this mode as like an ongoing development thing. Because they've already put out some updates to fix some things. Because I think when you pick up items, it requires you to hold down square, at least on PlayStation, instead of just clicking square to pick up the item quickly. So you end up sometimes just spending a lot of time just holding down the button. So I think they made some changes on that front. And yeah, it works pretty well. I don't know how well it's going to do as far as driving people to pick up Black Ops 4 when they have Fortnite for free on any platform out there.
Yeah.
As well as PUBG is half the price for it on Xbox and PC. But I think it's probably going to be a big hit for the Call of Duty crowd that's been wanting, you know, a battle royale game that plays the way that's familiar to them. Yeah, so that is neat. It's a lot better than I was thinking it was going to be, especially since they got a pretty good sized player base in each match. And also played Onrush, which is part of Game Pass for at least this month. And that is a lot of fun. I mentioned before when I played the beta that it's basically Overwatch as a racing game.
Yeah.
It's 6v6 matches. And yeah, it plays really well. It's fun. Not having to put down $60 for it helps out a lot. Because I don't know how fun it would be necessarily if you could just sort of burn through it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, I am sort of just jumping into that and playing it and having a good time. Kind of makes me think that game would have done really well if it was $40 at launch.
Yeah.
Especially coming out sort of right after the Crew 2 and sort of coming out in that the whole onslaught of June games this year.
Yeah.
That game could have really done well. It was a price differentiator over the others. But yeah. Hopefully it doesn't seem like Codemasters is really being very aggressive in terms of sales, because I think it's on sale on PlayStation right now for $36, 40% off, which that's a pretty big discount for a game that's about 3 months old, but for a game that they would probably like to have more people playing it, $30 or less would have been a good sale for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a game people should definitely check out if they can get it. It's $30 or below. But above that, and outside of Game Pass, it's probably a harder sell, especially now that people know that they've pared down the development team quite a bit, especially getting rid of Russ Freshtick, Freshensky, I forget what his name is, the guy that was the lead on Drive Club and the MotorStorm games.
Yeah.
Got kicked out of the team. But yeah, that's... Yeah. Hopefully he can rebound and get maybe a new studio that can maybe try for the MotorStorm thing.
Yeah.
As a indie. Sort of the same way that Three Fields is doing their own Burnout take on that. It's supposed to be coming out pretty soon in the next couple months.
Yeah, Dangerous Driving.
Yeah.
Looks good.
Yeah. And that's kind of been it.
All right. So, Lee, let's bring it home.
Yeah. So mine will be pretty simple. I finished Spider-Man, which I had a great time with, but you know, it's so funny. I don't have much interest in writing reviews anymore. It's just not something that interests me. But what I'm finding lately is there's all these games that I've been playing, and I'll read the reviews and stuff like this, and I just see all kinds of stuff that a whole bunch of people just don't ever seem to comment on, and it's actually really starting to piss me off. And the reason that I bring that up is with Spider-Man. like, make no mistake, Spider-Man is a fantastic game. It is an extremely well-executed game, and it is probably the best-looking PlayStation – actually, not even the best-looking PlayStation game I've ever seen. It's probably one of the best-looking games I have ever seen, particularly since when you look at it as an open-world game and you know, kind of how a lot of those tend to not be the best-looking things out there. Some of the level of graphical fidelity in Spider-Man with the characters is nothing short of astonishing. The animation set, everything is just, it's beautiful. The thing is, and I maybe there are some out there that have said this, but I haven't seen any, is that Spider-Man is a 100% carbon copy of the Arkham games. Like, 100%. Like, there's even stealth sections with Spider-Man. And they're not very fun because you're not Batman. The big difference is the swinging mechanic, is that you can get around and stuff like that. But I mean, it's got the same sort of open world filler bullshit. Like Chris was talking about how he's fighting these demons. So what happens is, you guys remember Spider-Man 2, where you'd swing through the city and a crime would happen. That same thing exists in this. And what happens is, by the end of the game, is there's four distinct sets of types of crime that happen. And it's the exact same thing every single time. The combat system is essentially what I, in my opinion, I think a dumber version of the Arkham system, except you have more opportunities to do a lot of aerial attacks. But it has takedowns. It has all kinds of, like, this is a 100% carbon copy of the Arkham games. And I don't recall any reviews, and I'm sure there are some out there, but I don't recall any reviews out there mentioning it. So that was just one of the things that bothered me. Like, I still think it's a fantastic game. But I don't think it's nearly as well constructed as the Arkham games were. And particularly because it feels like, like, where Chris is at, Chris is about at the midway point of the game. Like, by the time you get through the third act, and it really just starts to kind of grind on you. And I ended up platinuming the game. Like I said, I had a lot of fun with it. But it struck me as, like, everybody that reviewed the game may not have done most of the side quests or anything else like that and not really gotten the full picture, because it is definitely a carbon copy. I'd still play it, though, by the way. Just, I have the collector's edition and everything. So I totally recommend it. If you like the Arkham games and you like Spider-Man, it's worth playing. So that's one of those things that makes me want to just write reviews again. Like, and maybe just call the reviews, like, what all you other motherfuckers missed. You know? And then I can do it. And then I can do it 2 weeks after the fact, right? Like, I can just do, so, yeah, like, you read all those reviews. Here's the shit they didn't tell you, you know? But anyway, so I did that, and then I had God of War since it came out, and a friend of mine had suggested that I give it a look because, you know, I'm still dealing with a lot of stuff from my mom passing away, and somebody was like, you know, I think you might find this sort of cathartic. Maybe just, you know, give it a shot. And so I've been playing through that. We're about to go to Jotunheim. So funny part is, I have no way to gauge how far I am in this game. Like, it's the, and I'm sure you guys have all talked about it, the ones that have played it, but the way the game is structured is really fascinating to me. Because I guess I was sort of expecting it to be a much more linear experience the way the previous God of War games are. And it's so not that, but it still sort of is. Because, like, obviously you hit those walls, you can still run around and do what you want to do, but, you know, you have to do certain things to move forward. But it's been an interesting game. I've actually been – my son has watched me play some of it, so it's kind of a funny dynamic to have Kratos' kid in the game and then my kid sitting there and we're solving puzzles together. You know, it's interesting. So I'm doing that, and I've been playing Xenogears. And before you heathens say anything, yes, I have Dragon Quest XI. I just haven't gotten around to it because I have these other games that I want to play, and we're about to go on vacation. Next Saturday is when we're leaving. So I didn't want to be in the middle of Dragon Quest and then just drop it for like a week and a half. Cause that was,
hey, I hear you, man. I picked up Dragon Quest, got a few hours into it, and then NHL 19 happened. So yeah. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. I just didn't want to be like, you know, I mean, I've been like the guy screaming about how awesome Dragon Quest is since I've joined the show. And it's like, you know, all right, well, you know, it's 11's out, Lee. Like, if you played, I have played some of it, but you know what the funny part is what I'm working on is I'm trying to up the Wi-Fi speed in my house because I want to remote play it. You know, like, I'll still play it on my big screen and stuff like that, but it's one of those games where I would just enjoy grinding and things like that, and it'd be much easier to do it on my Vita, like, while my wife and I are watching TV or something like that. So, and like I said, I'm just, you know, we're about to go on vacation. I didn't want it to be like, oh, let me get 15, 20 hours into this and then I got to stop. So, yeah. So I'm probably start playing that when I come back. But the funny part is the day I come back, Forza 4 comes out, Forza Horizon 4. So it's like, shit, all these games.
You can't win. So,
but, you know, it's one of those things, like, where that Forza I can always pick up and put down. Like, it's always been like that, so we can do that. But yeah, that's been the big stuff, is knocked out Spider-Man, doing God of War. Hopefully, I mean, again, I have no fucking idea how long God of War is. I've seen people like, oh, yeah, you knock out the main story in 20 hours. Then other people are like, it's 60 hours plus, man. And I'm like, fuck, I don't want to do a
60 Where are you at in God of War?
What are you doing? We finished, what is it, Alfgard or whatever, and I'm about to go to Jotunheim.
Okay.
So I have no idea where that puts me in the game. But I'm enjoying it so far. It's pretty, too. It's weird, though. It's like an ugly pretty. Like, it's a good-looking game. Like, you're looking at it, you're like, wow, the texture work and everything. This game is fantastic. But, like, the armor that I have for Kratos looks like he's skinned like a gay snake. Mm-hmm. And so he just looks fucking ridiculous. Like, you can't be like the baddest motherfucker walking around Midgard dressed like you're going to the fucking that club from Police Academy. Like, it doesn't.
I mean, he doesn't give a shit what he's wearing as long as he beat the shit out of you.
Exactly. Yeah, he's dressed like he's going to the Blue Oyster Club. So
whatever. This gives me +2 defense. Okay, fuck
yeah. Exactly. Boy, don't comment on my attire. So anyway, yeah. So that's what I've been up to.
All right. Yeah, so before we get into our discussion topics of the day, I'll just give you a tip, Lee. If you want to fix your Wi-Fi, get some Eero's in your house.
The fuck is that?
Eero, E-E-R-O. It's a mesh networking system. It's like,
well, we're using the AI mesh from Asus. Let me clarify. I don't have a Wi-Fi connection issue in my house. It's more about the remote play with the PS4, where it just seems a little with the PS4 and the PSP. Because my PS4, like where I'm at now, I'm downstairs. I'm in my basement, and typically where I'd be playing my like my Vita is going to be in my living room, which is, you know, upstairs and like on the other end of the house. So I just need to. But I've got killer signal, but it just, from what I've been told, it's just the way the Vita is. It's just kind of laggy.
Well, both the PS4 and the Vita have shit Wi-Fi chips in there, so
yeah,
there's not a whole lot you can do there.
Yeah, I'm gonna. Well, the funny part is just with the Wi-Fi signal alone from the PS4, it says I'm getting 100 megs down and like 25 up. But I was gonna probably hardwire it today and see if it makes any difference.
Oh, it will.
Yeah, because I have a cable on my entertainment center. I have a cable running to my Apple TV, so I'll just take that out and plug it into the PS4 and see if it makes a difference. By the way. And I guess this is just because I don't play my PS4 that much, because I mainly do a lot of stuff on PC. My PS4, like, sounds like a fucking jet engine, man. Like, and at the most inopportune times, like, I'd be on the pause screen, like, on Horizon Zero Dawn, and I guess it was trying to do, like, 1,000 frames a second, because I was convinced that my PS4 was going to take off. Same way with, like, certain spots in Spider-Man. Like I would go out to the home screen, and it would go ballistic, just... But God of War, it's been fucking silent.
I'm not sure what's going on there.
I don't know. It's got plenty of room to breathe and all that. And I started looking it up, and they just said, you know, Sony just sucks. Mm. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. We'll talk more about that in a bit.
Yeah.
So, all right. So let's get to the big topics of the week. First one is kind of interesting in that we've been following Valve for a while, and we're wondering what the heck they were going to do. As far as their content moderation goes, turns out
I just want to say I called it.
Yeah, they just decided, let's just let everything in. So yeah, they've approved their first uncensored Eroge game. Basically, yeah, the fallout from Hatred is here. They're no longer making a distinction.
It took a
couple
years.
They allowed a game onto their platform that got an AO rating for violence. And they did not want to implicitly suggest that violence is more objectionable than that sex is more objectionable than violence. And so, yeah, they kind of painted themselves into this. And it's a good sign that the industry is growing up, but at the same time, you got to kind of wonder if we couldn't have arrived at this conclusion in a more decisive or mature way.
Cool. Can I make a suggestion, or not a suggestion, more like an observation on this? Why would I say suggestion? That was really dumb. Excuse me. Part of me thinks, just follow me down the rabbit hole here for a second. Uh-huh. Part of me thinks that, you know, when we're particularly this day and age, you know, and with all this stuff where anytime anybody makes a decision about what hits their platform, that you have internet trolls screaming that it's censorship and all these other things, particularly in the gaming community, where even someone's own ignorance can also mean that they'll be at the top of the roof screaming censorship and things like that. Part of me feels like a perfect example would be like, look at Twitter. Well, I'm using this as an example. So take a look at Twitter. You know, for the longest time, there have been people on Twitter that are threatening people, threatening violence, doing that, basically sending their Twitter followers after people and things like that. And Twitter is pretty much just held like a, you know, we're not going to censor anybody. That's their attitude about the
platform. It's the Church of Organized Outrage.
Yeah, exactly. And well, Twitter in and of itself is like the Outrage Olympics. I can't fucking stand it, but, I should get on Twitter to rant about Twitter. But looking at this, at what they're doing and how they're going to kind of get this through, like they, companies are in a really weird position right now where they're either going to take a stand or they're not about anything. And it just strikes me as one of those things like where part of me wonders if there are people at Valve, they're like, we absolutely should be censoring some of this stuff is crazy, but you also have especially nowadays with things like Gamersgate and everything else, and that you have a very rabid group of gamers that are just going to scream censorship about anything. And part of me thinks that because there's money on the line, look at what happened. You have idiots burning their Nikes while they were wearing them because of the Colin Kaepernick thing.
That was fucking hilarious, by the way.
That was hilarious, yeah. But, like,
you know, they'd already purchased them and given the corporation their money.
Yeah, that's something I'll never understand. Like, how are you going to smash your own stuff and then hope they get the picture? Like, anyway, but whatever.
Stupid.
Yeah, but the point I'm getting at is that at this point it seems much easier to let your fan base or the people that are putting money in your pocket have their own opinions about you not taking a side rather than you actually taking a side and then possibly, you know, leading to these types of like Twitter outrage and everything else like that and boycotts and all this other stuff. Like, that's kind of how I see this. Like, Valve is just like, all right, fine. We're not going to, you know, we're going to put this stuff out because if we do it, we're taking a stand and then somebody's going to get pissed. And I like, part of me wonders now, especially from like a company standpoint, and I'll be really curious to see what happens about this in the future, is if companies decide to make a stand, what kind of guarantees and protection they're going to provide to their employees. Because like, I'll give you an example with the Nike thing. I had to return a pair of shoes to Nike last week. And I called up and I talked to a woman over there, and I ended up reading this in Newsweek after the fact. A woman told me that people had been calling up and basically verbally assaulting the people that were answering the phone from Nike.com.
Jesus.
Colin Kaepernick thing, saying things like, the only good nigger is a dead nigger. Saying that to someone on the phone. Okay, mm-hmm. And that, yeah. Who cares if some black people get killed? We need to support the police. Like, saying this
Jesus
to the person
fucking
that,
Christ.
Right, saying this to the person that picked up the phone, and this was over shoes. And then that, like, and when I was, the reason I was late coming to the show is we were at Publix. I saw a guy that was wearing a shirt that was like, I stand for the national anthem. Okay. It's totally cool that you believe that stuff, but like, look at what's happened with the NFL. Like they've sort of stepped into this with them trying to censor their own players. They've pissed a bunch of people off with them not taking a stance. They pissed a bunch of people off. So part of me thinks that some of this with Valve, to kind of get back to the point, is just like, we're not going to take a stance because it's going to be too difficult to moderate. We're going to piss somebody off no matter what. And the consequences of taking a stand on this, we might have some of these crazy people really come out of the woodwork. And, you know, what could they do to us? What could they do to the employees? All that other stuff. Like, I think you're going to see companies really start looking at that. And I think it's part of the reason why you're seeing what Valve is doing right now, which is really not doing anything. And it makes sense.
Well, the people have been asking how they kind of get around this. And specifically with this first uncensored game they put out is that it's basically region locked. There are a bunch of places where, okay, so there's a lot of places where you can download it, but depending on, you know, where your server is, you cannot download it. So like,
yeah, you've been thinking about that with like Australia. Like, Australia is really hardcore about that stuff. So that might be another thing they're just not willing to step into.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was always a capability that Steam had.
Yeah. But this is basically sort of how they've gotten around it.
Yeah.
So to a certain extent, they've got plausible deniability. I guess.
Well, and that's what I think they're going for, because that plausible deniability, like you, I think what you're seeing with companies, period, is they're going to do one or two things. They're going to take a stand on whatever it is that they want, or they're going to take the stand that they have no stand, and then they're going to look for the plausible deniability in not having a stand. Like I saw, I was watching Bill Maher last night, and what's the guy that used to run Microsoft? Is it Steve Ballmer? Was that his name? Uh-huh. Yeah, he was on there, and he's actually doing a project called Just the Facts, where they basically, they don't do any forecasting or anything else like that, but they just get pure numbers and then lay them out for people about all kinds of things so that they can make their own decisions. And what was interesting is that they were asking him, like, you know, well, what do you think about this? What do you think? And he refused to say anything about anything that would be taking a side. And I think that's just, again, I think you're going to see anybody that's in any sort of big business or anything else like that is polarized.
Moderation fallacy.
Yeah, as polarized as we are in America about everything, I think this is the kind of thing that you're going to start seeing going forward, where there's going to be groups of people that are just absolutely outraged about anything, and these companies are just going to be, you know, zipping their lips and not saying anything, because they may have one group of people that are upset now, but what if they take a stand on this thing, then they're going to have another group that's pissed off, and it just ends up being a horrible experience for everybody. And they're politicizing something that makes them money, which is they don't want to do that.
Yeah.
On a more practical point, though, I do have to ask, like, where does this end up going? Like, let's fast forward about a year. Okay. There have been, there's been enough time for a whole bunch more of these titles to end up on Steam. And now, you know, like, you, Lee, or Ryan, you're a parent, and now your kids can go on Steam and get access to what is basically porn.
Well... Well, do you want to game that out? Because I actually have an answer for it. I'm sure Ryan does too.
Yeah,
it's my responsibility to monitor what my kid does. Like I don't feel like it's something that Steam needs to do. As long as there are parental controls in place to allow me to control that.
And aren't there parental controls?
I don't know. I'm sure there is. I've never had to look into it because my kid really doesn't play on the PC. But that would be the kind of thing where if he was like, Dad, I really want to get into PC gaming and things like that, I'd be like, all right, well, we're going to sit down. We're going to take – because like right now I control his screen time on his phone. I control his screen time on the computer, on the Xbox, and everything. And so I have everything set up to where I can or cannot allow him to do things. I also have filtering on the internet so he can't get onto like Pornhub.com and all of that stuff. So – that, I feel like that kind of stuff is my responsibility. Like, I do think companies have a responsibility to provide you the control so you can control what your kids are seeing. But I don't think it is something where parents need to sit there and be clutching their pearls and go, how could they allow something like this? Because if your kids have access to the internet, they can see anything that they want. And so it's really your responsibility to be the arbiter of that, to control that stuff. And I think if you're looking at it from a business standpoint too, this will be one of those things that's purely like, well, the market sorted it out. You know, Valve strikes me as one of those types of companies that you know, believes very much so in the invisible hand, which when you look at Steam sales, that's sort of a very micro version of the invisible hand at work. So, but yeah, I feel like it's completely my responsibility to monitor what they're doing. Now, if Steam didn't have parental controls, then we'd be having a different conversation, and I would be like, all right, we're not going to install Steam on your computer because I have no way to take a look at what you're actually doing.
And I would also suggest that if it's not already in place now, that they are going to have to have some sort of cordoned off adult section where those games are sold.
Yeah, I think they do have search filters
like search
to prevent mature stuff. All that, you have to specifically go in and turn that off. But I think I was looking at it on the settings on Steam. They do have a family view thing that you can turn on that you can limit. It's like, no, you don't have access to the Steam store or the community or your friends group, the friends list, that sort of stuff. And you can limit it to specific games as well.
Well, Ryan,
which I'm sure that's a thing you would look for to do, is look for your hundreds of games. Like, okay, I got to go find the 50 or 60 that are okay for you or whatever.
Yeah, no, I'd much rather be some like catch-all thing that just basically allows me to filter that way. Because that's the other part about this that I think a lot of companies need to take responsibility for is that there can't be any excuse right now to not have these sorts of things, like not taking a stance on any of this. But there's no excuse now with the technology that's available to kind of do that pearl clutching and go, well, we can't allow this kind of stuff because what if the kids see it? Like, this isn't 1981. This isn't 1994. Like, there are plenty of options just through technology alone that allows you to really control this stuff. But I think what you'll see and what we've seen historically about violence in video games and everything else like that has been a bunch of inept parents, frankly. And inept – and we'll say inept at best and negligent at worst, where they don't want to have any responsibility. Unfit. Yeah, where they don't want to have any responsibility in the things that their children consume. And I find that wholly irresponsible. And you know, what's funny about that is like my kid is sitting in my office with me here, and he's watching YouTube right now. His friends are playing all kinds of stuff that I will not allow. And, you know, and it's one of those things where it's like, okay, guys, like you have – and maybe it's a little different because I play games and I do a video game podcast, but I don't think it's that. I don't think it's very hard to educate yourself on what your kids can get a hold of. And I just, you know, with as long as they're parental controls and they're adequate, then I really think as far as that, people should be able to put out the kinds of stuff that they want. Especially, and to take it political, we live in a day and age where Donald Trump is our president and he is insulting everybody, calling women dogs and everything else like that. Like, I honestly think I'd much rather have my child shoot people in Borderlands than hear the shit that comes out of the president's mouth or have to explain to him why the president felt it was appropriate to raw dog a porn star like 6 weeks after his wife gave birth. And then we get into the conversation about like, oh, well, what, this is an affair and this is what happens. And this, oh, look, this, she seems to be a trophy wife. Like, those are much more uncomfortable conversations for me than, oh, well, these are mutants and you can shoot them in the head. So,
right. Yep. I did want to get Ryan's take on this before we move on.
Yeah, definitely. Ryan, no worries. I mean, I honestly couldn't agree more with what you'd said. I mean, as a parent, I feel like it's my responsibility to moderate that kind of thing and put the controls, you know, how I want to have them on our computer, or on our game console. That's on me. And if it's not on Steam, you know, it's somewhere else. So I really do need to be in charge of that. I can't expect Steam to be in charge of that, Valve. Now, if they didn't offer any sort of parental controls, that would be a bit of a problem. And, you know, it'd be a different conversation. Maybe we just wouldn't have it on.
Well, then it would be going before Congress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but in terms of, so, I mean, I think they should be able to put this kind of, and honestly, before this came up today, I kind of assumed it was already on there, to tell you the truth. I think that it's a parent's job to be kind of in charge of that. On the other side of things, should they censor this kind of thing or not allow it or put it in their terms of service? I mean, I don't think that's really for me or anyone else to decide other than the company. They don't owe us a completely uncensored environment. If they're a private company, they can do whatever they want, and someone else will offer that if, you know. So if they did censor it, that wouldn't bother me either. If they don't, that's the way I would probably go with it, and then just put on the controls, like you say. But I thought you guys made a good point with the kind of creating a separate, like, in other words, if you sort by new and popular, I don't necessarily want a flood of these games to show up.
Bazooka,
you know, I mean?
Titties 3 right next to, you know, Dragon Quest 11 would definitely cause some issues, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel some like, I don't want those showing up in the suggestion feed just because they're coming out left and right and they're popular and whatnot, you know? So it seems like you should have to click into that environment and then see what you want to see. But if it exists there, it doesn't bother me. No.
Well, you know, they could, I don't know if you've had to deal with parental controls with Microsoft, but if you want to set up parental controls on Microsoft for a kid, you actually have to do a pre-charge authorization on a credit card that basically proves the person doing this is 18.
Right.
So I could see if they wanted to do something like that on Steam, that's something I wouldn't have any issue with. Like with Microsoft, it's $1 and then they like refund you.
Yeah.
But that's basically the verification that the person doing this is an adult. And of course, it's not foolproof. I mean, you know, a kid can get a parent's credit card, but then that goes back to the onus really being on the parent of, okay, now right. you need to pay attention to your credit card bill. Like if you've never bought anything from Microsoft and you have, you know, $1 or $5 charge on there, or in this case, something like Valve did it, that comes back to being on the parent. And that'd be something else I don't think I'd have a problem with. Because in the same way, like I used to work at a liquor store when I was a teenager, and you know, you can't buy beer without an ID. Like that's the way that you prove that you're an adult. And so they did something like that where it's like something that proves that you're an adult that wants to buy an adult only game. Well, the real way to do that is being able to throw a charge on a credit card, because you can't have a credit card if you're underage.
Right. Yeah, something like that. And then, like you said, if the kid is digging into your wallet or the mom's purse and taking stuff out, then you've got a whole different problem.
Yeah.
And that's not Microsoft's problem or Valve's or anyone else's. That's yours. So, no, I don't know. I'm good with whatever they choose to do. It looks like they're going the uncensored route. Would like to see them create a separate environment like we had kind of talked about, and then offer the ability to lock that out from a parental controls perspective. You know? And if they do all those things, I don't see what there is to complain about.
I think they should probably do that anyway, because, like, and I'm not a person that's a prude or anything else like that, but if I am looking at, like, I'm not going to video games because I want a pornographic experience. So I would want to be able to, like, look at the new charts or the sales charts and be able to see, you know, like, traditional games, not porn games. Like, I feel like that's something they should definitely do anyway. Because that would be one of those things that would turn me off just as a consumer, like making it feel like I walked into like the porno aisle. Like we used to have those old video game or old video stores. You know, like have it sectioned off, because you don't want to have Bambi right next to, you know, Big Dick's 27. Yeah.
It'd be like the old video store. If you didn't have to go through the saloon doors, if it was just out there with everything, you know, it'd be a little off-putting, you know, to just kind of browse the aisle. Yeah. But, you know, if you wanted to see what's new and to not have it, because you guys had mentioned, let's fast forward at 6 months, 12 months. Well, I think we all know where this is going to go. There's going to be a lot of these, and they're going to be daily releases, you know. And that's fine. But just, it should be its own. You shouldn't be looking for a new RPG experience and then get that thrown in. You know what I mean?
I think I think this also brings up the opportunity for, like, who are going to be, like, just in terms of comedy, who's going to be, like, the shovelware porn game guys? Like, is there going to be an LGN of porn games? You know,
I'm sure there will be.
Like, that's the kind of thing I would, that will just be funny for me, just from that perspective. Like,
in Japan there already is.
Right, like, who's the Square Enix and Blizzard of porn games? And like I said, who's the LJN?
Like the Digital Homicide.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then further than that, what about that one porn game that takes off? And is that the Call of Duty of porn games? Like, yeah, that'll be that'll be fun to talk about whenever it actually happens.
So stay tuned in 12 months. So I guarantee you that will happen.
Yeah. Honestly, the positive takeaway I would get from all this is just, we finally reached a point on a major platform where an AO rating is no longer the kiss of death.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a critical moment in the industry growing up.
Yeah.
All other things put aside.
Yeah. And the one last thing I'll say about this too, is that, cause talking about AO, like, you guys all remember Grand Theft Auto, what was it, San Andreas with the hot coffee thing. That was such a big deal. Like, but if you actually ever seen Hot Coffee, is really tame. Obviously, it wasn't even supposed to be there. And the funny part about that for me is that, speaking as a parent, like, I would not want to have my kid doing something like what you could do in Hot Coffee. Like, but now, I mean, look at if you're playing, if you have, you know, children that are 13 or 14 and they get a hold of like a BioWare game, like, you know, you can have gay sex in those. You know, it's not as explicit, but I think that also kind of is sort of an American problem, where the idea of sexuality or having to explain what sex is seems to be a thing that a lot of parents don't want to approach. And obviously, I don't want to speak to Ryan. I don't know how old your kids are, but mine is old enough that we've had these conversations. So, I'm at the point too, like, where if we watch a movie or something and, you know, a boob pops out, I think I'm a lot more comfortable with him seeing that than, like, you know, we watch something that somebody gets their head cut off, you know? So I think that's also maybe also a values thing and kind of how we treat our children and what we deem as acceptable and what isn't. Whereas I would much rather see him, you know, see some sort of sexuality than, than, like I said, you know, like RoboCop. Saw. Yeah, or Saw. Yeah, like that to me is far more pornographic than, oh, her boobs popped out. You know, so anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you and I kind of fall a lot in the same camp on these things.
Yeah. Cool. All right, so let's get to something a little bit less serious. We don't want to be too down on what's going on. So I turned on my PS4 a couple days ago and was greeted with a firmware update. Oh, 6.0.
Yeah, it's a stability update.
Had the same thing happened to me.
Yeah. So a major point release that has absolutely no new features.
Nope.
What the fuck is going on here?
I think somebody...
Is that not the most Sony thing that's ever happened, though?
It totally is. Yeah. But they must have found some sort of security exploit they were trying to get ahead of. And that's the only reason I can think of it. Because it's like, yeah, I looked at it too, and it was like, stability improvements. Like, this is very Nintendo-esque what you're doing here, Sony. Nice job.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They also released PS Vita firmware 3.6.9. So,
well, I know that is because of the Enzo hacking update. That's probably to patch them out of that. So
yeah. But did they have to use the Little John and the East Side Boys there?
You know what kills me about the whole thing with Vita is, like, the only people that have a Vita now are the people that are hardcore about the Vita. Like, just let the fucking thing get hacked. Like, all the way. Like, just, you... Sony hasn't supported the fucking Vita for, like, the last 6 years. Everybody else has, but not Sony. Like, just... Don't just get out the game, man. Come on. Just let them do what they're going to do. The PSP is still awesome because all the shit you can get it to do. Phil is fucking loving his PS3 again because all of the shit he can get it to do. Like, Sony, just step up.
What's making the PS3 exciting again?
Yeah, exactly. Like, just stop. Like, you guys already cornered the market this gen. I mean, fuck, three of the games that have come out in the last year, I think, have all been like Game of the Year contenders around Sony platform, with Horizon Zero Dawn, with Spider-Man for a lot of people, with God of War. Like, you got the shit on lock. You don't care about the Vita. Let me play some Super Nintendo games on it, man. Fuck.
Yeah.
F-Zero, that's all I ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, that runs great, by the way, on PS3. Just point that out. There's been a lot of speculation about what the hell is going on here, because this drops right before TGS.
They haven't unlocked yet?
That's possible. People are speculating that there's stuff in there that's... they've said it's back-end related, which could potentially mean maybe this is the ability to change your PSN ID finally.
Yeah, but is that something
they wanted that
really...
conversation to be over before PSX.
Yeah, but is that... I mean, that's not a reason to use 6.0 firmware, man. Like, that's something else, too. Like, when you look at, like, Sony compared to Microsoft, and it's so obvious, like, Sony is at its core a hardware manufacturer, number one, and a software creator, number two, whereas Microsoft is the exact opposite. Microsoft does software first and hardware second, because you can look at it, like, all of the stuff that's like basic quality of life for almost anything that Microsoft has done, Sony's like 3 years behind on. Like, I was looking at the PS3 the other day, like, just like having to sync trophies. Like, what is this shit? How did y'all not get this figured out last generation? But like, as with Microsoft, like, but then, you know, you have Sony coming out with this hardware that is still to this day just making things that look absolutely stunning, and, you know, and they're getting the software behind them, and Microsoft, who is a software company, can't do it. It's really bizarre. So, but then look at the firmware. 6.0, baby. Well, what's in it? Something awesome? Yeah, security updates. Oh, okay. Cool.
And what kills me is that they did a beta test for this.
Yeah.
It's
got to be security related. I mean,
yeah, I don't know. I'm just picturing the conversation, if you can talk to any of them. Well, why did you do a major point release if it's just security updates? Oh, man, you remember what just happened with the PS3? We totally just kept that from happening on the PS4. You wouldn't believe how relieved everyone is about it.
Or they might just pull a trick, like a typical Sony fashion. Like, why'd you make this 6.0? Like, well, why not? We're number one.
Yeah, I think that's probably more most likely, is they just don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, in the statement they said, it's like, yeah, we do a 0.0 release in the fall, and we do a 0.5 in the spring, and that's what we do.
Because Tony, fuck you, that's
Sony's over there like, I do what I want. Oh, okay.
Yep. It doesn't matter that we're versioning wrong. That's just what we do. So,
just shut up and go back to playing Spider-Man.
Shut up and play Spider-Man. Yeah, really. It's kind of, you know, emblematic of the biggest problem with Sony right now is that, yeah, they're not really opposed, except for that, you know, other little company called Nintendo, who's, if Sony isn't careful, is going to get their lunch eaten by. So, yeah, I want to start doing something a little bit more pro-consumer. But that's another rant that I could get down.
That
are we talking about Nintendo being on the right side of that debate for once?
For once. apart from that whole, we'll delete your cloud saves if your subscription.
Nintendo, man, okay. So, like, we always have joked for years, like, Nintendo's gonna Nintendo. Like, this shit with the cloud saves is, like, the most Nintendo shit ever. And, like, I was on the Reset Era forums, and the amount of people making excuses for Nintendo being them, I will never, ever, ever understand it. It was the same way with people with Sega. Like, fucking Pat, Phil, you guys remember Alex Watchtower?
Yeah.
Like, all of these Nintendo fans are Alex Watchtowers. That's all they are. And it's like, Nintendo, like, oh, well, we destroyed your left Joy-Con because we felt like this game would only work properly with the use of the right Joy-Con while the left one was dead. Nintendo fanboys would be like, oh, yeah, you know what? That makes perfect sense. Yeah, you destroyed $60 worth of hardware, but I see why you did it, and I'm with you. Like, I don't fucking understand.
To be fair, that's probably where they all went.
Yeah, that's definitely true, but I don't get it, man. I don't. Nintendo is so fucking behind on so many things, and they make all of these great decisions, and they make a whole bunch of stupid ones. And, like, you can call a spade a spade. Like, just because you like a company or the things that they produce, you can also point out when they're stupid. And you know, to that point, that's kind of like the American way. Like, that's the beauty of where we live. Like, you can like something and still say that it's that a company or someone is doing something stupid. Like, that's a purely American. And I cannot fucking fathom these people that are just so willing to give any of these companies a pass for doing stupid things just because they like the stuff that they put out. Like, it's the same shit that you see people levy against, like, super Apple fanboys. I really like Apple's products, but Apple has done a lot of stupid shit over the last few years. In fact, I think their whole launch with the XS phone is also stupid, but people are like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. It's the same way. I would not, you know what? I bet you Apple fanboys and Nintendo fanboys are the same type of people. Now that I'm saying it out loud, because it's like, just so for comparison's sake, like, to make this fair, Microsoft does cloud saves for free. You don't have to have, you don't have to have Live. Sony makes it so you have to have Plus, but they keep them for 6 months. Okay. Not as good as Microsoft, but at least there's some wiggle room, right? Nintendo is like, oh, Nintendo's like, all right, you're not paying us? Fuck your saves. Like, what? Like, but I can back up my saves from my consoles onto a USB stick, but I can't do that with the fucking Switch. Like, you should be offering cloud saves for free because the system that you make is a partial portable fucking system. And the fact that you're not, and then you're making people pay for it, and then you will delete them right afterwards if they stop paying you. Like, you, part of your target demographic are fucking children. Like, sometimes maybe they're not going to have the money, Nintendo. Like, what the fuck? Oh. Or they lose things. Like, people lose shit. Like, I'm not going to lose my Xbox One X because it doesn't go anywhere. My Switch right now is upstairs. To be honest, I'm not quite sure where it is. I know it's in the house. Like, and I'm a responsible adult. Like, oh, fuck. I hate Nintendo. I swear to God. I love the Switch. And just, like, the shit that they, like, we can get the Final Fantasy games on the Switch now. This is amazing. Like, all of this cool shit that they announced, then they announced something that's stupid. Why do you do this? Do they have Rain Man running the company? Fuck.
So 200, everybody.
But you don't have strong feelings about this in any way.
I'm actually really indifferent, to be honest.
What do you think about, should they allow voice chat game?
Yes, they absolutely should. Like, what
Fortnite
the
does.
Right. Yeah. Like, this is 2018. What the fuck are you doing?
Oh, there it goes again.
I felt like there was a little more left in there to
I don't pull out. Like, Nintendo.
Let it out.
Oh, They are a company that they own fucking Game Freak, which is that makes games that are based on social interaction, but you don't want people to talk to one another in other games. What the fuck?
This is just basic stuff at this point. You know that they shouldn't even really offer. It's just we expect it. It should just be baked in from day one.
Yeah,
you should be able to, you know. Life. Yeah, this is just standard stuff. You know, say positives and in-game chat. It's normal.
It's normal.
We shouldn't even be really needing to talk or ask about, you know.
No. And the fact and the lack of thought that they put into it is apparent that somebody had to ask that question. It's like, when are you going to delete them? Well, what time did your stuff expire? Noon? All right, we're deleting them at 5. Like, what? Like, and something else is just, you know what it is? Nintendo is, if you were to boil down what Nintendo is, like in a video game, Nintendo is Breath of the Wild. A bunch of really good ideas and a bunch of really fucking stupid ones put together in something that's beautiful. That's all it fucking is. And one section of it works really well and the other doesn't. And like, because like the comparison of Breath of the Wild is like, oh, this is an open world game. Wait a minute, you mean I can't wait out this rain? Oh well, fuck. Oh, this is an open world game. Okay, well there's a degradation system. Okay, but surely I can repair this stuff, right? Oh, I can't. Okay, all right, this is an open world game. I can cook things, but certainly I can save the recipes, right? Oh, I can't. Okay, let's see. Okay, oh I got yeah. Okay, so this is an open world game, right? And let's see. Oh, you gave me this ability to like a shield surf down a mountain. That's really, really cool. That's a cool thing for traversal. That doesn't wear my shield down. Oh, it does wear my shield down. Okay, right. Okay.
And then you eat shit.
Yeah, like everything about this. Oh, we're going to give you these cool new weapons. Oh, this is really cool. I can't wait to use it. Oh, wait, I'm going to use it 5 times and it's going to break. Oh, okay. Well, maybe I don't want to do that. Oh, cool. I finally got the Master Sword. Wait, if I use it too much, the Master Sword needs a timeout. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. That is Nintendo in a nutshell. Like, they have these cool things, and then they fucking completely limit how you can actually fucking use them. Anyway, when we're done with this, if we want to talk about something lighter, maybe we could talk about the abortion debate or peace in the Middle East. I have some exit strategies.
Well, we could just get to Sony's pre-TGS announcements, because they've had quite a few of them already.
Oh, yeah.
And there's been some pretty interesting ones.
Yeah, well, I can go over that. DY6 has a release date. February 15th. Well, yeah, they also announced that during this. So. They also announced it during the show.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that one.
Yeah. So they also talk about VR stuff. Everybody's Golf is coming to VR. It seems like it should be a pretty neat thing they're doing. They also got Kingdom Hearts VR, sort of an experience thing that they're doing. Seems like a good one to do. If they're going to promote 3. But they also put out a new trailer for that featuring Big Hero 6.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else.
How many kids do you think are going to confuse? That are going to be confused that love Disney right now, and then they jump into Kingdom Hearts 3 and they go, "What? What?
Probably all of them.
How does any of this work?"
Yep.
I know several adults that can't. Well, have no idea.
I'm in that boat too, and I played Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2.
Yeah. Let's see. Cygames is working on a new PS4 game called Project Awakening.
Yeah, I'm really excited about this one. This one looks really good.
An action RPG. Kind of looks like a bit of maybe Dragon's Dogma and Monster Hunter in there. These guys, this publisher, worked on mobile stuff like Grand Blue Fantasy and Dragon Quest Monsters Super Light. But now they're working on a big PS4 game. Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles. It's getting remastered for PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and I think PC.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's coming out next year at some point. So there's the Final Fantasy game you always wanted.
Actually, I think that's Crystal Chronicles is actually a really fun game when you play with people.
And this time around, it's going to have online support.
Yeah, but I bet we still won't be able to talk to one another on the Switch.
Yeah, but you got 3 other platforms you can.
Yeah.
God Eater 3 got a release date in Japan for December 13th. Still waiting on a Western release, but there's some more monster hunting fun for people in Japan. Square Enix announced the new game from the studio head up by the Tales guy, Hideo Baba. It's called Project Prelude Rune. It has a really nice art style.
God, why do these JRPG have such screwed up titles, I swear.
Yeah.
I just want somebody to produce a game called I Need Scissors 61. I'd buy that without even knowing what kind of game it was.
Yeah.
SNK announced their next big game. It's Samurai Spirits.
Yes.
Yes, it is the...
reboot.
2.D reboot, 2.5D reboot of Samurai Showdown. Yeah.
And look,
this is
like
long
it has
as
a bit
stay
of
away from full 3D.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like it has
that.
A bit of a...
They tried that, and it didn't work very well.
That's so bad.
But yeah, that seems neat.
It looks great, the trailer I saw. And they ain't skimping on the blood either.
Nope. Yeah. Let's see, there's another Battle Royale game coming out called Knives Out. This was on mobile, I think.
Yeah, this is the one that PUBG Corp sued.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see how that does. But
yeah,
it's also the platform where PUBG is not on.
Yeah. As of right now, anyway.
Yeah. Let's see. Kadokawa Games has a new game coming out called Love R. Come out February 14th. I assume that's a very Japanese anime lady game.
Probably.
Yep. The new game from Ryuga Gotoku Studio, Yakuza Studio, called Project Judge, or Judge Eyes, as it's also talked about here in the trailer. You like Yakuza?
Yeah.
What if it features a former lawyer who's doing an investigation?
Oh, so it's Better Call Saul.
I was saying, is this Phoenix Wright? Phoenix Wright Yakuza? Because I would totally fucking buy
Phoenix
that.
Phoenix Wright beat people up.
Yes! Oh, you object? I got some for you. These hands.
Yeah, so that's out December 13th in Japan and next year in the West. There's a demo already on the Japanese PSN.
Mm-hmm. I need to call Capcom now that I'm thinking about this.
Yep. Let's see. They also have a new trailer for the Front Mission spinoff, Left Alive. It's that weird game that Capcom's putting out that has Yoji Shinkawa's art on the cover. Hmm. It always confuses me. It's like, wait, what? He's still with Konami? It's like, nope. He's kind of independent, but he's working on this game.
Yeah.
That's neat. I think also for VR, they announced that they're doing Space Channel 5 VR.
Ooh.
Which that is a pretty cool thing. It's not Seaman VR I've been wanting.
No.
Because
Seaman VR would basically just be a waking nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it would also be perfect for VR.
Oh, yeah,
it would. Been perfect for, like, Kinect. As far as talking, but they screwed that up. So
yeah.
that's the Sega I like to remember.
Yeah,
you know, the crazy experimental Sega.
Yep. Now they're just porting old games to new platforms.
Yeah.
So alongside this,
you can't make anything better. I don't see the problem in porting.
Yeah. Alongside this, Deracine is coming to PSVR on November 6th. We got a date for that. That's the new, like, adventure game from Software. But they're also partnering with Japan Studio.
It looks pretty good. It's pretty neat.
Yeah, it looks quite a bit different from what they've worked on for a long time. But that looks pretty neat. And also, The Last Remnant is getting remastered for PS4.
Oh, man, there's a blast from the past.
And this is a game that Square made for Microsoft for Xbox 360. Got ported to PC a little bit later and was supposed to come to PS3, and that eventually got canceled.
Yeah,
got delisted last week, so it makes sense what they're doing.
So they essentially are remastering it, new visuals, all that. It's going to be out on December 6th. Those are just two of Square Enix's port/remaster announcements of this week.
Yeah, so for those who never came across Last Remnant, The Last Remnant was basically it was like a turn-based RPG, but the way they did it is that they had it so that the party of characters also had like a backing army that came along with them. So it's really kind of hard to explain, and it was also notoriously convoluted. So
yeah, that was a lot of Square Enix early on last gen.
Yeah.
Just lots of weird shit that didn't really make any sense.
Yeah, we'll see. And yeah, I guess we'll go to Nintendo again since we kind of touched on it a little bit already.
Okay, look, this is the good stuff here. We're going to be talking about, and then we're getting to that other thing.
Nintendo is like my teenager after he does something stupid. I swear to God.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, why'd you do that? What was the point? Yeah. Anyway,
I'm 14.
Yeah, and that's feels like that's what Nintendo behaves like.
No, they're 114 or whatever.
Exactly, but they look, but they could do the typical Japanese thing. But they look like a preteen.
So I guess the big news was Animal Crossing.
Animal Crossing on the Switch. It's happening.
Did anybody have any doubt that this was ever going to happen?
No,
no doubt in my mind.
What I have to give Nintendo credit for is that it sort of feels like right when we were hitting that point where we thought the Switch was really going to have a lull, that they put a lot of thought into not having that happen.
They've really
boosted that with like indie games and a lot of that. So I got to give them a lot of credit for that. And then really starting to like pull out the big guns. But I think trying to do it right and not just have it be a cash-in, I also got to give them a lot of credit for that too. I won't give them credit for anything else, but I got
credit. 2019 looks to be really good for the Switch, whereas 2018 has been terrible for me. I have no Nintendo games that came out this year that were interesting to me outside of Picross.
Yeah,
it's been the same for me, but I've got so many like third-party games that I've really been enjoying. So.
I haven't really touched any of those. I got a couple indies, but for the most part, it's been kind of a down year for the Switch for me. That's due to a lot of the stuff that gets announced for the Switch being stuff that came out on PS4 and Steam and Xbox One.
I think that's probably the difference for us is that my backlog is so deep that I could drown in it. And so them putting out stuff that I always have wanted to play and then putting it out on the Switch just works. So I'm like, oh, I could play this instead, or I could do that. So that's why I think it's been a different experience for me with the Switch. Whereas for somebody like you, Chris, I know you're able to play a lot of things. It's probably not that big of a deal because you're like, oh, I already played this. Whereas for me, I'm like, fuck yeah, I wanted to play that like 5 years ago. I never got around to it. This is great.
Yeah. For me, it's my Switch is not portable. So it does the exact same thing that the PS4 and Xbox One and PC
can do. It's the exact opposite for me. My Switch, I never played in the dock. So.
Yeah, I don't take it portable, so those are now portable games. There's no if they're going to put it on 3DS, maybe, but also at this point, my 3DS is full on storage, so it's like I don't really want anything else. So I guess if you want to go over some of the stuff, Phil, 3DS got like four things announced.
Yeah.
Kirby's Extra Epic Yarn, which, cool, that's out next year.
Yep.
I don't know why that's only on 3DS. That seems like Switch port as well.
Isn't that, Epic Yarn, that was a Wii U game, wasn't it?
Wii.
Yeah. Wii?
Yeah,
no, the Wii game. There was a Yarn one on
it's
Wii.
It's Yarn Yoshi.
Okay. Yeah, you're probably right.
Yoshi's Woolly World.
What was the one Kirby game that was on? I could swear there was a Yarn
the one
Kirby
that was the ball.
Kirby Rainbow or something like that.
All right. My bad.
Yeah, so that's going to have... What does it say here? I was going to have some King DDD and Meta Knight sections in that. They announced, Mario and Luigi, Bowser's Inside Story, plus Bowser Jr.'s Journey. They show off the Bowser Jr. part of it. And that's going to be out January 11th.
I think those are Peach's kids, just for the record.
They probably are.
Yep. Luigi's Mansion got a date, October 12th.
Yep.
Again, I don't know why this is only on the 3DS, but...
It's because they don't want to confuse people on the Switch with another Luigi's Mansion game that was announced.
Yeah, that's coming out next year. They announced a new update for Yo-Kai Watch Blasters. Add some new stuff, but nobody really cares about that.
Yeah, I'm actually curious. Has that been selling, like, at all over here?
Over here, it probably sells okay. Enough to justify them localizing it.
Yeah. It's not Pokemon.
That's very much a Japanese thing where they have toys and all that. I see those occasionally in like the toy aisles at like Walmart or whatever.
They wanted it to be Pokemon.
Yeah.
But it's not Pokemon.
There are probably some kids that are really psyched about it, but it's not Pokemon. So Luigi's Mansion 3 got announced.
Yes.
2019.
Very happy about that.
That's a list of 2019 games.
Mm-hmm.
And further to the list of games that Nintendo announces without dates, I see people tout that a lot of the time. They don't announce games without dates. And it's like, here's Animal Crossing, Luigi's Mansion 3,
mm-hmm.
2019.
Yeah.
Let's see, what else did we get? New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe. with Toadette being added and Nabbit. And Toadette gets crown power-ups.
Where she can
morph into Peachette.
Yeah. That
just says a lot of weird things about
genetics. Yeah, that like 5 seconds of footage pretty much made the internet lose its damn mind.
Okay, so wait, is Peach like half mushroom? She used to be Princess Toadstool. Is her mom a mushroom?
Well, if you remember,
you know,
like,
strange things happen in the Mushroom Kingdom, dog. That's why it's called the Mushroom Kingdom. And you know those people are eating them shrooms and having some experiences.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you remember... you remember reading the instruction...
No, I guess that's kind of anything goes, isn't it?
Thousand Hills used to be people.
Yeah.
But yeah, that also includes new Super Luigi U. So that's some good stuff in there, if you have not played the original. Yep, and that is out January 11th.
I'm looking forward to that, but the thing is now with all of these, I wish Nintendo would do something where it's like, I will get these again on the Switch, man, but give me some kind of fucking credit. You know, don't charge me 60 again. Give me a discount. Give me something. Like,
they do a package, a collection of new Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, like...
Just, imagine being able to play new Super Mario Brothers 1 and 2 on a console for the first time.
Yeah, those are on the Wii U.
They are?
Yeah, but on a system people
play. On a console people give a crap about.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a big thing. It's I only picked up Tropical Freeze on the Switch because I got in on that Target price error thing, so I was able to get it for like $30. And that was acceptable for me. But I actually thought new Super Mario Brothers U was actually really underrated. I thought that was a pretty good game, and I don't really like the new Super Mario Brothers games, to be honest. But I thought new Super Mario U was really, really good, and I would definitely like to buy it again. But I'm not going to buy it for $60.
Yeah,
you know what I want more of? 3D Land / World.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we'll get there. 3D World is ported over at some point.
What I hope they do is I hope that they'll port the original Xenoblade over to the Switch, because it looks like shit on the 3DS.
Yeah,
it really does.
But you'll notice another couple of titles have been added to the Wii U Evacuation Project, so that continues to happen.
Yep, let's see, Yoshi's Crafted World, we talked about the name, was at least figured out last week.
Yeah, it's basically Yoshi in an arts and crafts world.
Basically, their take on like Little Big Planet.
Somebody over there is like watching like the Hallmark Channel a lot or something, and coming up with all these crap.
Or one of those like all those DIY
channels. But it's producing great
content,
so they can keep doing it. As far as I'm concerned,
yeah. But it's just funny. Like, I wonder if like they get together on the weekends and be like, "So we're gonna make this thing, and we're really big Martha Stewart fans, and blah 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 blah." Like, why don't we make some fucking video games out of this? Well, sure, we're already doing it anyway.
Yeah, that's kind of been mostly the same studio, I think. Feel Good.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, the whole point is they're trying to sort of, this is the same thing they did with Yoshi's Woolly World, is they're trying to sort of channel that sort of homemade feel.
Yeah.
Like, you know, with found objects type thing. Which is, I mean, it worked really well for Yoshi's Woolly World, and it looks like it's going to.
I applaud it. Like, I think anything where they're sort of getting away from the generalized Nintendo house style, I think is pretty cool. Because I still think the best looking game Nintendo's ever done was Super Mario World 2. Yoshi's Island is still just...
No, that was out there, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was... Yeah. It put a lot of people off at the time, I think. But, man, that game is something else. And so I'm down with them. Like, anytime they're doing any of these crazy graphical things, I'm totally like, oh, that's really cool. Like, because especially in this day and age with so many things, you know, the generic white guy protagonist and everything. Like, I think it's great that they're doing that stuff. But,
yeah,
I'd love to see them do a Super Mario World 3 with, like, the Switch's power and actually see what they could produce.
Yeah. Yeah, they've been trying a lot of like different art styles for the Yoshi games as they try to capture the spirit of the original Yoshi's Island, but mostly it's been crap up until Woolly World.
Yeah, it was okay. So Super Mario,
Yoshi's story was all right, but it was easy.
Yeah,
that's a game that was. There's actually more to it, but nobody figured that out.
Yeah, so like I was saying, Yoshi's Island, you know, it was sort of, it had like that sort of children's drawing, coloring book type of art style to it that made it so endearing. And they kept trying.
It was so good.
Yeah. And what they did, they tried to do that with Yoshi's Story, but instead of like And this is actually sort of like a common theme I've seen with the Yoshi games since Yoshi's Island, is they're trying to add like these different sort of artistic feels to it. Like Yoshi's Story was basically all about stationary, right?
Yeah.
And it had a lot more going on inside of it, but unfortunately, Nintendo really didn't bother explaining any of that.
Yep.
So the game ended up being like really super easy. And then Yoshi's Woolly World came out and was a blast, and it was a hit. And now they're doing the stuff with arts and crafts. And I'm like, well, what are they going to do next? Play-Doh?
That would be really interesting.
That would be
dope. That was what they did with the Kirby Rainbow Curse thing on the Wii U. As much kind of like a Play-Doh looking thing. But for Yoshi's Crafted World, that is out spring 2019.
Yep.
So that's another...
I'm happy they're just differentiating. Like, I don't really like the plastic Nintendo look for the most part. So, plus, I think it's really cool because you know there's some creators that are back there that are just like, which this will be one of those things I could give Nintendo credit for. Like, they're obviously letting them run with this stuff and go, well, what if we tried something that looked this way? You know, whereas, you know, I think some people might be put off with that, but there's definitely a element of creator joy when you look at that stuff. Like,
well, I think part of it is because due to the failure of the Wii U, they kind of realized that they couldn't gamble their entire company's fortunes on just the like four core franchises anymore. Yeah. They kind of needed to branch out.
Yeah, and I think the Switch has been a sort of a really interesting realization of that because there's an incredible diversification of titles on here. And I think that Nintendo is also, particularly with the indie market, I think has positioned themselves in a way that Sony used to be interested in. And it feels like Nintendo's sort of taken that crown from them. I gotta give them credit for that.
Yeah, so let's see. There's a Smash Brothers Ultimate Switch that's coming out. It's not.
Yep.
I don't think it includes the game because it's out about a month earlier, November 2nd. But it's $360.
Definitely doesn't.
And $360 includes the branded Joy-Cons, the dock. You get a code for...
Yeah, you get a download code.
Yeah, code for the game.
Yeah.
But you can't use it until December 7th.
Imagine if it did actually include a full copy of the game in the box a month early.
Yeah, then...
They would be on eBay for thousands of dollars.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised if these codes do that. People just want to get the codes early.
Does that bundle come with the GameCube controller?
No, I think it's just the Joy-Cons and the dock.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So the normal stuff that comes with the Switch. Yeah, no real discount then, because the game's $60.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's weird. Yeah, really weird. But yeah, then they went to the Final Fantasy block. So everything here is also coming to Xbox One. And some of this stuff is also coming to Steam and PS4 that wasn't already on there.
Yeah.
Now, I would just want, because I need to ask this, because I haven't really gotten a clear answer. Is this Smash Brothers that's coming to Switch, is this an entirely new Smash, or is it an updated version of the Smash Brothers?
I think it's
Wii U?
Updated, but also upgraded.
Yeah, I think it's the Super Turbo of Smash.
Okay.
Basically, they're taking Smash 4 and pouring in all of the content ever.
Yeah. And then I guess then adding some new stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. Maybe like if they did the arcade edition of like 4 or 5 and put that on the next platform.
Yeah.
Added all the stuff with it. But yeah.
Because I was thinking like, man, if that's the case, what's going to be the new end boss?
Sakurai himself.
And he just straight up hangs himself.
Yeah, Sakurai and Reggie and Miyamoto. So three of them. It's the Nier Automata thing.
Don't give them any ideas. They are crazy enough to do that.
We got the Final Fantasy block, which includes 7, 9, and the 10 and 10.2 HD remaster.
Yeah, did you notice something that wasn't in there?
Yeah, same thing.
One of these things is not like the other.
I'm really interested in the reasoning why they didn't do 8.
Well, they left it out of the PS4 ports. They left it out of the mobile ports.
Yeah, it's out on Steam, so it's no real reason why they couldn't port that over like they did 7.
Sounds like somebody just owned it. Yeah.
Or
maybe
there's some sort of rights thing that's involved. No, I don't know.
I don't know why it would be on Steam if they had rights issues.
Well, this was the least popular of the Final Fantasy games, and they figured
which is amazing because it was a big seller when it came out.
Yeah,
it was the follow up to Final Fantasy VII. Of course, it was a big seller.
And it was the first one that didn't use chibi characters.
What?
Didn't that come out right around the Dreamcast launch?
Yeah.
Okay, and then
I literally picked up my
PS2 launch.
I picked up my copy of Final Fantasy VIII along with some of my Dreamcast stuff.
Okay. Yeah, so we got that stuff coming. I don't think there's a date for that stuff yet. It's probably next year at some point.
Yeah.
12 is also coming.
Yep. Zodiac Age.
So, yep. That'll be next year, I believe. They're also bringing Final Fantasy XV Pocket Edition.
Did they mention whether or not the Zodiac Age is going to have the speed-up stuff that the remaster did?
Yeah, it's all the same stuff.
Yeah, it is the Zodiac Age.
They're just porting that stuff over from PS4 and Steam.
I wonder what the frame rate will be.
And one thing that I find interesting about Final Fantasy XV Pocket Edition, and I'm not sure if you knew about this, Lee, do you know who the battle design lead was?
No. Clockwork. I didn't even know. What? Really?
Yep.
Who?
He's a fighting game player. No shit. Okay.
No, I couldn't hear it. What was
that? Kind of got my attention.
Clockwork. He's an old MVC2 player.
Oh.
No shit. Okay. That's interesting.
Yep.
Well, yeah, you know, Tragic's working. I think he's working for Riot now. So there's a lot of guys.
Doesn't surprise me at all.
He did the combat design and the battle system for Darksiders 2. So anyway. Yeah, so
what's up?
No, I was going to say, they didn't mention what the frame rate would be, did they?
No, they didn't talk about anything. Just saying it has all the same features. I assume we'll find out closer to when it launches.
So for 12, that's funny because I have a friend of mine I think 12 is his favorite game, and he's tried to get me to play that so often, and I just can't get into it. Maybe I'll be able to finally get into it on the Switch.
Yeah, it's basically Final Fantasy 11, but solo.
Yeah, exactly. No. So with this pocket edition of Final Fantasy, what is the difference? Like,
it is pared down in terms of there's no open world. It's a lot more streamlined and linear, and also has a different art style.
It's more chibi, it looks like.
Yeah, it kind of looks like the Sia Rhythm games, like that kind of art style, but 3D. So like the big round dark eyes sort of thing. So it seems like the streamlined version of Final Fantasy XV might be better for the people that like the classic games.
I might actually check that out.
Yeah, it's on sale for 40% off, so about $18. For I think at least a few more days on the Switch. Yeah. I think it just ended on Xbox One and PS4. But yeah, along with that, they're also bringing a upgraded version of World of Final Fantasy Maxima. It's on November 6th. That's also coming to PS4 and everything else. Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon, Everybody. And Buddy is in Buddy. That's a new edition of the Chocobo Mystery Dungeon series. It's out this winter. PS4, Switch, Xbox One, and Steam. And obviously Chris Chronicles is also coming with an online multiplayer. And that's out 2019. So yeah, a lot of stuff, but also all the same stuff. It's been on PC and PS4 for a few years at least.
Yeah.
Which makes me wonder, you know, when are they going to get to 1 through 6 and get 8 and maybe Tactics in there?
Well, 8, I would
think Tactics already has a remake.
Shows up.
Yeah, but
dude, if they put War of the Lions on the Switch, oh man. If I could have Final Fantasy Tactics on the Switch...
I mean, they're bringing Crystal Chronicles over that I think you couldn't say any other Final Fantasy.
They'll get around to it.
Yeah. And say Dragon Quest as well. Cause
yeah, dude.
Over
oh my
here,
God.
That's such a fragmented way they've brought those games over.
Yeah.
It's like 1 and 2 is on the Game Boy Color. 4 through 6 is on the DS, but those are not in stock anymore.
Yep.
7 and 8 are on the 3DS. And 11 is on the PS4 and PC, and it'll be Switch at some point, and like 9 is on the DS. It's like having them on at least one platform that isn't mobile would be nice.
Hopefully 11 will do enough because enough sales wise because we know they have a Switch version coming out.
Yeah.
Hopefully 11 will do enough, as far as sales that Square will be like, let's drag all of these games back over and put them on the Switch. Like, man, I'd be so fucking happy. If
they I know they have a couple of the Dragon Quest, the old games on PS4 in Japan.
Yeah.
They haven't brought them over yet. So it's like, you're doing some things, but let's get this like uniformly over into the West and give people like an easy way to see the whole history of the series.
Yeah.
Like you, for the most part, can with Final Fantasy.
You know, the one thing that I wish Dan Reb would have been able to ask when he interviewed Yuji Horii was, you know, do you guys have like, and I don't think there would have been a respectful way to do this, but it would have been one of the questions I would have loved to ask him. Like, do you think maybe there's a fundamental misunderstanding from your team about why Dragon Quest hasn't hit in the West? And kind of go down that rabbit hole, because there's, especially nowadays, there's no reason that those games can't be successful here, especially with the JRPG renaissance that we're having. But, yeah. You know, I think a lot of it is historic. I think the fact that they didn't have any come out for the Super Nintendo, which is when Final Fantasy had its really got its traction in America and then hit critical mass with Final Fantasy VII, and then, you know, they bring out something that looked like a PlayStation 1 game with Dragon Quest VII, and just,
yeah.
And it was 2 years, it was like, wasn't it a year after the PlayStation 2 came out? I can't remember the exact time. But, just like simple stuff like that. Like, I know that they've always waited, but I would have loved to have that kind of, like, even if it was off the record, that kind of conversation with them, because it does feel like everything that's on the Dragon Quest checklist should appeal here. But yet there's some reason why it never, ever seems to take off. And part of me thinks that it's definitely marketing and maybe just a sort of a misunderstanding. Like, fuck, this game came out next to Spider-Man, like 11.
Yeah.
Like, that was crazy. Why do that? Like, especially when 11 had been out for a long time. 11 should have come out in June.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I could see it coming out in, like, August.
Yeah.
Early part of August, like, right after Madden.
But they're putting it right in between. You have Spider-Man now. You have Forza Horizon that's coming out. And then after the following month, you have Red Dead. You have all of the big start to Assassin's Creed. Like a part of me wonders if that's Square going, okay, well, this is a big title, so we're going to put it out when the big titles come out. Like, yes, you should do that. But you should do that if your other titles sold a lot and are expected to come out in that time frame, not just because you thought it was a good idea.
I think the one thing that's at least in their favor is that Spider-Man came out at the end of the week, whereas Dragon Quest was in the beginning.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of the reasons I didn't – I'm a fucking diehard. One of the reasons I didn't start playing was like, Spider-Man's coming out, and I need to be able to like dedicate a month to this game.
Yeah.
And asking somebody to dedicate that kind of time – in this time release window is a little nuts. Like you could expect that if you had Final Fantasy's pedigree, you know, from like the PS2 era, you could get away with that because then everybody would get out of the way of Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
But like, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't even Call of Duty change their release date because of Red Dead?
Yeah, they're coming out beginning of October.
Yeah.
Battlefield's going for the end of November.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're all spacing themselves out. So, looking at this Nintendo Direct, I kind of want to get Ryan's take on it. How much of your money has Nintendo gotten here?
The Final Fantasy stuff definitely is where I have my attention. I already pre-ordered Smash. And so this all these games coming out was a big surprise to relive 9 and, you know, 7 and 9, I think, are the ones I'm looking forward to the most. World of Final Fantasy, I've heard good things about, but I honestly don't know a lot about it. And then that Final Fantasy 15 Pocket actually does have my attention because it is a narrower walk through the game. That's a game that I have started probably 3 times now, and I just haven't been able to really sink into that as much as I wanted to. So, yeah, I think for me, the big thing was the Final Fantasy stuff. I mean, Nintendo continued to do a great job, you know, getting our money. As far as this announcement goes, that's what has my attention. You know, Metroid Prime 4 coming out next year is also something I'm very much looking forward to.
Yeah.
Their online thing isn't really what I wanted. And I don't know if we were going to talk about that too much, but they had announced more games from the NES era coming to the console.
Yeah.
And that,
yeah, they filled out the list that they were going to.
Do you want to go over it?
May as well.
Yeah, so I don't know which ones were part of the initial list and which ones weren't, outside of a couple, but here's the whole 20 games. We have soccer, tennis, baseball, ice hockey, pro wrestling, We got Donkey Kong, Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 3, Balloon Fight, Ice Climber, Dr. Mario. We got The Legend of Zelda, Double Dragon, River City Ransom, Ghosts and Goblins, Tecmo Bowl, Gradius, Excitebike, and Yoshi.
I think if you're going to start with a NES lineup, that's a pretty solid one to start with.
Mm-hmm. It is.
You mean an NES lineup?
You're not going anywhere near that one.
Uh-huh. It is, and I didn't mean to kind of knock it. I guess I finally just got the NES Classic Edition, and it just feels like I wanted to, I don't know, I guess this just feels like a cut and paste of that, which is probably great, you know, because it is portable, but I don't know, it would have been fun to get some things that weren't on there. River City Ransom stands out.
Same for me. River City is what stands out, but I was actually really underwhelmed when I saw the list. Like,
yeah, but don't forget, River City, now you're going to be able to play that online.
Yeah,
I know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe my expectations were too high. Like, I was just having this conversation with my son the other day. Like, I love old beat-em-ups so I can throw people into pits. Like, that's my thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't know why I'm that way. Like, when I was doing kill commands in God of War the other day, the one where he picks the guy up, runs him, and then he can throw him. Oh, those motherfuckers were going right over the cliff. And Spider-Man, I was kicking people off of buildings. Like, I don't know what's wrong with me. That's my thing, though. Like, and it all started with Double Dragon.
We need to expand on our flight of stairs technology.
Yes, we totally do. Games. And just have at the end of the flight of stairs have a pit that goes, you know, that's bottomless. But no, I don't know. I think I'm with Ryan, though. Like, I have an NES Classic, and this sort of felt like a remix of that. And yeah, some of the stuff's online, but I would have liked to have seen more titles. And frankly, I would have liked to have seen some Super Nintendo titles out of the gate. And it feels like, and I felt like this for a long time, it feels like the online stuff is still rushed, even though the Switch has been out now for a long time, or in the second year. It's almost like Nintendo doesn't really know what to do. And what's interesting to me about it is that one of the things that I'm regularly knocking Nintendo for is that they don't seem to pay attention to what the market's actually doing. This strikes me as something where they are trying to pay attention to it and look at like a Games with Gold and a PS Plus, like you get free stuff when you have our online. But like, it still just doesn't feel very well thought out in terms of, like, I think it was almost like them going, well, this is something we have to do. And as opposed to, you know, let's do something that's really going to blow them out of the water and is going to make, you know, be a real surprise for a lot of these people. Like, nothing on that list besides River City Ransom was a surprise to me.
It was litmus test stuff.
Yeah.
It seems like they want to
have to do to not get crucified.
Yeah,
it seems like they're putting it out, seeing what people think, see what they want more of, and they'll go from there.
Yeah.
When people were talking about the online service, you know, it sounded like, hey, we're not going to do the virtual console, but we're going to have this Netflix-like experience. And I don't know if Nintendo said that, but that's what everyone had kind of compared it to. With that being the expectation, and then hearing that the price was going to be whatever it is, $20-$30 a year, I knew I was going to get it day one, but now I don't think I am. There's just not enough there for me.
It's not compelling enough.
Yeah, it's not compelling enough. And, you know, the way to do it would be, and again, I don't know that Nintendo so much said this, but maybe they implied it, to have something that's the Netflix of Nintendo games on your online service. You need to do it the way Microsoft did when they did Game Pass. There was 100 games on day one. It was 100 of them. So there's nothing wrong with these games. They're all great games. They're classics, and they frankly have to be on there.
Yeah.
But they're just –
It's underwhelming.
It's underwhelming, yeah.
And I've heard people argue to that point, Ryan. I've heard people argue, well, it's cheaper than Game Pass. It's cheaper than Gold. And all that's true.
I'd gladly pay more.
Exactly. That's the thing. I would pay 60 bucks a year for a Nintendo service that had those games and had something similar to Game Pass. I would totally do that. And I'm a guy that's now subscribed to Game Pass. I have PS Plus. I have Xbox Live. And I will eventually get the Nintendo thing. Like, when you're looking at that, even if I cut out Game Pass, I'm spending, if we're doing retail, I'm spending $120 a year for online services. I'd gladly jump that to $180 with a Nintendo Pass if they did for $60 if I had my Super Nintendo games and all that. And I think, too, something that's really important here, and I don't know if you were going to get this since I kind of jumped in on you, but what I really would like to see what Nintendo is planning on doing in the future. Because Microsoft, like I'll never pay retail price for Game Pass. I think it's a really cool idea, but I'm not going to pay $120 for it. If I could pay $60 for it, just like with Live, I'd be totally there. Because we took advantage of that sale where you could get a year for $60. I should have just doubled up had I known it was going to be this good. But Microsoft has been very clear about what's coming. Nintendo is not a company that works that way. And that's something where it's kind of like, okay, yeah, it is just $20. For me, it's going to be $35 because we're going to have to do a family pass. But it's like, what do you have in the future? And I think that it is really clear Nintendo doesn't really know how they're going to go just with the way that they're launching this. Whereas, you saw Microsoft get stupidly aggressive and go, every first-party game that we have is going to be out on Game Pass. Boom. Like, holy shit. Like, and I wouldn't expect Nintendo to be like, well, Smash is going to be on an online service. No. But this is also a company that has the deepest backlog of anyone as far as classics go. And if they just said, you know, year one, we're going to be putting out, you know, 150 NES games. And then in year two, you're going to get 150 SNES games. And this is how we're planning on doing it. I would totally buy into it. But it just feels like this is the same company that let the Virtual Console essentially over here rot. You know, I don't trust them to do this right and to really give me my money's worth. And it doesn't seem like they know how to do that. And that's my biggest concern. It sounds like Ryan and I, for the most part, are on the same page there.
I wish they listened to this show.
I just don't see any compelling reason to get it day one, like unless I wanted to go play Splatoon, which I don't.
Yeah. This is the Nintendo Online service basically looks to me like the Smash Brothers Online tax.
Yeah.
As far as that's going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what everyone's going to be doing with it.
Yeah, so they got like 3 games a month coming over the next couple months. For the rest of the year, it's like additional stuff.
It's a drizzle.
I don't know if any of this is particularly great. There's like Solomon's Key, NES Open, Super Dodgeball in October.
It's literally the Wii U Virtual Console or the Wii Virtual Console all over again.
Only like, with a subscription model.
Yeah, and they really dropped the ball on that one too. So.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be 3 a month. It really should be like 30.
Yeah.
It's not like they have to reprogram all of this.
Yeah. Well, here's the start. Put some of the WiiWare games on there. Games that you couldn't get elsewhere. You know, start putting those in.
Especially since they're shutting down the Wii Shop.
Well, they've already shut it.
Well, no, you can...
Well, you can't buy anything off of
it. You can't put money into it. And so now it's like people have money in it, can go spend that over the next couple months, and then it's shutting down.
Yep.
It's always been so remarkable to me that the company that has the most to gain from these things being preserved is the one that's not very interested in them being preserved.
Yeah.
Like when you look at
this, and then they get indignant
when other people try to do it.
Yeah, and then not just that. This is the same company. Like just like you said, Pat, they get indignant when people are trying to do that. But you know, to take it a step further, this is also a company that has shown how lazy they are about it. Where some of their stuff got reverse engineered, and they were jacking ROMs. That other people and like stuff with the emulators that other people had already done. And it's damn, could you be any more fucking lazy?
Yeah.
You guys really are the breath of wild of the companies that are out there.
Yeah.
If they brought back like the Rebirth series that they had done, which was the Konami, like they did Contra and
Capcom. Oh, that was good stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they could do that. I mean, that's value. That's value that's not easily, you know, unless you happen to have your Wii hooked up, you're not getting into that. But that would hook me more. If they announced that and if they had that day one, I'd be in. But right now, with just looking, and I have River City Ransom, just the cartridge, I'll just play that.
I think it just shows that Nintendo fundamentally doesn't understand the pool that they're jumping in. They just know that there's water there and they want to get wet. But they don't understand what they're actually doing. You know, they have an obligation
they have to fulfill. They'll just check that box kind of thing.
Yeah. And I have no faith that this will be something that is worth the money going forward in the future. Because, I mean, this is, for all of the stuff that they do well, this is Nintendo. This is, they have acted confused by the internet as a whole since the internet came around. So,
old man yells at cloud.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is intriguing. They've got this library of classic games that you can play on the go portably. You know, that's a great idea. But they need to come out of the gate swinging a little bit, you know, and they're not. They're kind of walking out going, well, you knew these would be here, you know, and it's like 20 games, 3 a month. I guess I'll see you in a year. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, it honestly, the parallel I can draw to it is this strikes me as a Sony move in a certain way, where it's like, well, because Nintendo knows
Sony isn't that timid.
No, yeah, Sony would be like, we're giving you what you get and fuck you, you know, like, but Nintendo that's the funny part about this is that it strikes me as a very, like I said, number one, they don't know what they're doing. They don't know the pool that they're jumping into, but also a very arrogant way to do it. And they're just going to go, well, people are going to do this because we're Nintendo. And it's like, yo, man, the game has changed. Like, you really want people to pay this stuff. You got to give them reasons more than, you know, games that are 30 fucking almost 40 years old. Like, you got to do something different.
What's crazy is they started this whole thing with the virtual.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't a thing before, you know? So,
yeah.
Or the virtual console. Yeah, to have that. They started that. Now everyone's doing it except for them, and now they're bringing it back, kind of. You know?
Right.
I don't know.
They should have been the market leader for a long time.
They should have been, yeah. And the Wii virtual console was amazing, I thought. You know, they didn't take it as far as I had hoped they were going to go, but it was really cool. And they had so many other consoles on there.
To be clear, I wasn't saying that the virtual console was bad. It was the way that they handled it was bad, you know, where we get like, you know, one release a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it had the potential to be so much better. It just seems like they should have been on top of
it. There was a long time I was maintaining a complete set of virtual console games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually gotten a letter from them at one point. That was interesting.
Yeah, it was.
But they actually wrote you for being loyal on the virtual. Yeah. Wow.
It was just this picture signed by Reggie. Said thanks for being a good customer.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did you see the NES controllers they showed off?
Yeah.
That's part of the NSO offerings of their special offers. So if you're a member, you can pay $60 for this pair of controllers that essentially
they're Joy-Cons with an NES skin.
But they can only be used for the NES games.
Which is another thing. It's just give me the Super Nintendo versions.
Yeah. Well,
and also, why is it? Sorry, you're probably going to say it's limited to one per user.
Yeah.
And only available through the store. It's like, why do we got to fight so hard? You know.
Yeah, and they're doing it like it seems like they're doing it on a. They're printing up as many as they get orders, because they say shipments begin in mid-December, for the early people, and then. They will come out after, you know, based on how people buy them.
You know, one thing that now that we're talking about this and thinking about the controllers, one thing that I wanted to point out, does this scream to anybody that Nintendo believes that the people buying the mini consoles and the people that have Switch are two different groups of people?
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about it here, like, why would I do any of this and why would I buy another set of $60 controllers? Like, yeah, of course I can do it portable. Fine. That's a given because it's a Switch. But you want me to pay you, you know, the 20 or the 35 a month or a year that I'm going to have to pay and then pay $60 for controllers that are only going to work for this NES stuff. But I've already got an NES Classic. So.
Well, they think we're assholes.
Well, yeah, they either think we're assholes or they think that those two groups of people are not the same. And I think that's part of the problem because they absolutely are the same group of fucking people. Now, you may have more people that are interested in a virtual console than a Switch, or excuse me, not a virtual console, but a mini console than a Switch. But, you know, it was kind of apparent that there were a ton of people that wanted to buy this when they were selling on eBay for $250 last year. Yep. So what the fuck are they really doing? Like it's just the same thing. It's like, you know, who's behind the wheel of this thing? Like, you don't even know who your own customers are.
Yeah, it seems like it's aimed more at people like me who don't want the classic.
Yeah,
because I don't have that nostalgia for the NES.
Yeah,
but also I don't have that nostalgia for the NES to pay $60
for
controllers with limited usability.
Yeah, so if the nostalgia isn't there for you, then what's the point of you buying these controllers? You know that. Especially at that price point, $60 for two.
If they're essentially NES-style Joy-Cons that could be used like buttons. Joy-Cons, I would be on that, probably.
Yeah.
Well, the attitude surrounding this as well, like, if you subscribe to our service for $20 a month, we will give you the privilege of paying us another $60 for these almost useless controllers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Arbitrarily limited controllers.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's we love you, Nintendo, but god damn, you confuse the hell out of us.
The only way you can charge these is by putting them on the Switch while it's in the dock.
Yeah.
That's the other part that's just so stupid. Like, I swear to God, man, Nintendo, and especially some of Nintendo's fans, it's just like, this is the kind of relationship you have with somebody that beats you, where it's just like, wait a minute, you want me to do this, and you want me to pay $60? It's the equivalent of somebody being like, oh, he hit me because he loves me. Like, come on, man. What the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. Have you seen the other sort of catch with the NES stuff?
There's another one?
Yeah, there is an online check-in. So it can be offline for a week before you have to come back online to play them again.
So what? Play them again. Oh, my God. Yeah, I'll just play the hacked versions on my 3DS or my Vita or my 3DS or my Vita, because
we'll get our own backward compatibility with blackjack and hookers.
God, man.
Oh. Yeah.
So okay, so I think we kind of
and then they'll act like we're in the wrong.
Yeah.
And we kind of
how
back...
dare you, sir?
Yeah. Hey, do we kind of go back to some of the announcements from the? Sure. Direct, because I got there's some more stuff. We'll try and go a little bit quicker, but
talk about Nintendo anymore. Yeah. They suck.
Game Freak has a new RPG called Town. It's coming out next year. It kind of looks like a 3DS kind of style RPG.
Is that the official name?
It's a working title.
They need to leave it.
But essentially, it all takes place in one town.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So you recruit people in your village to help you out.
What are you doing? I'm playing Town.
Yep. Let's see. There's Katamari Damacy Reroll, which is a remaster of the original game. It's also coming out on PC.
Yep.
Let's see. It has HD Rumble, gyro controls, and multiplayer. Seems neat. It's $30. So it's more expensive than the original game.
Yeah, it's got the Switch tax.
Yep.
Yeah. I was hoping this would also be coming to PS4 and Xbox One, but I can get the PC version and use my DualShock so I can have the proper controls. Asmodee Digital is bringing over a bunch of their tabletop games, including Carcassonne, Lord of the Rings Living Card Game, Pandemic, Munchkin, and Catan. I think Carcassonne is coming out in December is the first one. So yeah, getting some of those mobile sort of tabletop games on the Switch.
Yeah, I played the shit out of Carcassonne on the Xbox 360. So
yeah. Capcom has the Beat 'em Up bundle, which includes a bunch of their classic arcade games.
Final Fight,
Captain Commando,
Knights
of the Round, Armored Warriors, and Battle Circuit, which is also out on PS4, Xbox One, and I think PC as well.
Oh, you had me at Knights of the Round.
Yep, that's coming out this summer, or this winter.
That's a buy.
20 bucks, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. Keep in mind, Armored Warriors is, I think, probably the rarest CPS2 game. I'd be able to get that.
That is out September 18th for PS4, Xbox One.
Next week.
Switch, I think, is delayed a bit. I think so.
Yeah.
They're saying winter, but I'm seeing dates for the other versions. So that's a little bit weird, but City Skylines also come into the Switch, which the trailer they had for this looked very much low frame rate. So that's out this winter. It's going to include the two expansions that they've released, so there's a little bit more in there. Civ 6 is also confirmed, as we saw
last week. I think
it's
a mobile port, though.
Yeah, that's out November 16th, and I have a 4-player wireless LAN multiplayer mode.
Yeah.
They just confirmed Mega Man 11 is also coming to the Switch, has the demo out now. There's going to be, if you tap any of the existing Mega Man amiibos, you'll get some in-game items, like energy tanks and such. So you can get that. And I think they're also putting out another Mega Man 11 amiibo edition. There's updates for Splatoon 2 with some new stuff in it. Mario Tennis Ace is also getting an update with some new characters in it. Diablo 3 Eternal Collection is coming on November 2nd. $60 includes Ganon items.
Hmm.
Yeah, Legend of Ganondorf cosmetic armor set. And it's compatible with all amiibos. I think it just gives you like special challenge stuff.
Yeah.
To get loot. Seems neat. Starlink Battle for Atlas is out on October 16th.
Yeah, with the Star Fox tie-in.
Yep. Let's see. Square has The World Ends With You is out October 12th. You know how much that game is? It's $50.
$50. Yeah,
fucking kidding.
Yeah, I looked it up. I'm probably going to go get the DS version for 20 at some point in the near future when I can get over to a GameStop. They also got Torna, the expansion for Xenoblade Chronicles 2. It's out. It's now, if you have the season pass, September 21st.
Is somebody driving?
Please, Mike.
What?
Yeah, it's your fault, Lee.
There it is. I mean, it sounds like a... Yeah, I hear you.
Warframe is out November 20th. So people can get in on that. Let's see. NBA 2K19 is out now. NBA 2K Playgrounds 2 is out this fall, which is the 2K people picked up NBA Playgrounds. The sequel, at least. So that'll be coming out this fall for the arcade edition. Just Dance 2019 is the 23rd of October. FIFA 19 is the 20th of September. Team Sonic Racing is this winter. LEGO DC Villains is out October 16th.
Yeah, we're going to say goodbye to Castlevania Ryan because he's got to go.
Have a good one.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, man. Sorry, it went a bit long.
Oh, no, I'm glad that you guys had me out, and I don't mind staying long. So, yeah, thanks. Thank you.
Yeah. Have a good one.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Stay in touch, and hey, if you ever want to be on and talk about random crap, well, let us know.
That's what we're here for.
Yep. Sounds good. All right, gentlemen. Thank you.
Take it easy.
Later, man.
All right, and we'll just wrap up, finish up what they've announced, and we'll... end the show.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so, and then they kind of ended it with Isabel doing some stuff, which I was like, okay, here's the Animal Crossing, and then she's talking about Smash, like, fuck! So, yeah, she's joining Smash Brothers. I don't care, but then they did the real thing with Tom Duck basically in the dark on his computer. Talking about getting back in business for a new Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
It's going to be out next year. The first one we've had since the 3DS game on 2013. And this is going to be a big game for them next year.
Yeah.
Especially since they skipped the Wii U. So people have been like, where the fuck is Animal Crossing, you fucking assholes?
Such a peaceful series that gets such a violent reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I gotta pay my mortgages, bitch.
Yeah. So, you know, this was a very, very content-packed direct.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was.
Nintendo's good at that.
Yeah. Well, it was very dense. They had a lot of stuff in there. And they had a lot of announcements.
Tried to hold it back when they had the delay, but a couple things came out.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're a Switch owner, you're not going to be starved for games. That's for damn sure.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just strange that they can do all this good stuff and then do all of this other weird, stupid shit.
Yeah, like wait till less than a week before their online service launches to say, hey, it's going to be out.
Yeah.
Then here's everything that is a part of it.
Yeah. But anyways. Okay, so we'll wrap it up there. Usually we do picks of the week, but I'll just do one quick one here. If you are in the process of refurbishing a PS3, you may be looking for a power supply. I've linked off the PlayStation Dev Wiki here, which has a chart, shows you what power supplies are in which, and which power supplies are compatible with which models. So if you're looking for stuff on eBay or whatever... look this up, and you'd be able to find yourself something that will fit and not explode. So that's what I've got.
The only thing I had for a pick of the week was just say buy NHL 19.
Yeah.
Because they've earned it.
Yeah, I'm very interested in it now that hearing what you've been saying about it. What about you, Chris? You got it.
So there is a big sale on the PSN. Called the PlayStation Picks Sale. Ends on Tuesday, but has a ton of good stuff in it.
That's an interesting name. It dates back to the very first PlayStation demo disc.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, they got a lot of stuff here. Super Hot is pretty cheap at $17.49. One of its first deals I've seen in a little while. I've seen a bunch of, like, 99-cent games. Probably not great on any stretch, but for a dollar, not too bad. Konami has a lot of their PS1 stuff on sale. Metal Gear Solid, I think the Suikoden games are on there. I'm trying to double check. Psychonauts is $2. Skulls of the Shogun is $3.49. Trying to see what all is here. They got all the Street Fighter V versions and all the DLC. The Witcher 3. There's quite a lot of stuff here to check out. And like Jazz Punk is $3.74. The Mega Man Legacy Collection's on sale for $6. So I'm check out those games. Let's see what else is here. You can get all the Life is Strange Season 1 and Before the Storm on sale for some good prices. Galaxy is $5. If you haven't played that yet, it is a real good roguelike shooter. And yeah, there's some nice VR stuff here. Psychonauts in the Rhombus of Ruin is $6. Thumper, I think, is also, I think it's $8.
This is a dangerous sale.
There's a lot of good stuff here. The game I particularly like, Infinifactory, is on sale for, I guess, $12.49. That is a factory building game. It's a puzzle game, essentially. So you're setting up the lines and such to get the items that they want you to make sort of in the right order and all that. So you're kind of building up these systems. It's pretty fun to mess around with. Super Hot VR is also on sale. That is, I think, $17.49 as well. The bundle is not. That's a shame. But Burnout Paradise is $15. Just Cause 3 is real cheap. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff here. There's Vita games as well. The hyper-mentioned Neptunia games are like $2 or $3 each on the Vita. So if you need your anime ladies on the go, there you go.
So I guess we can pretty much all agree at this point that PS4 is basically becoming Steam.
Ton of games.
Doing it right.
Ton of stuff that can go on sale. Yeah, the Legend of Heroes Cold Steel games are on sale on the Vita.
Yeah.
$20 each, I think it is. Vita and PS3.
All right.
Still surprised those aren't on the PS4 yet.
So I guess we'll end it there. So I'd like to remind everybody that if you haven't subscribed to the show, you can do so via Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, or your favorite podcast aggregator. So for everybody, I have been Filippo DiNolfo, and we will see you next week.